For those of you who are not on the committee, welcome. If this is the first time participating in this meeting, it is an open public meeting, and so you are more than welcome to listen in and hear what we discuss and talk about. There is no outside communication or participation by anybody joining in. So the only people speaking at the meeting will be committee members as well as staff. And so just to remind you of that, please don't raise your hand. Please don't take yourself off of mute and attempt to speak because you will not be recognized. The purpose of us conducting this meeting in this format is for the purposes of transparency and an open public meeting only. With that, I'd like to do a roll call, please. See where we're at with our committee.
Caputo?
Here.
Harris?
Here.
Asfari?
Here.
Dodell?
Here.
Fukami?
Here.
Imtiaz?
Here.
Kalamji?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Awesome. Full house. Welcome, everybody. So we do have a quorum. Understanding that, is anybody on the committee at this time anticipate having to leave early for any reason? And let's say earlier than 4 o'clock?
I'm leaving at 3. I send a message to...
Okay.
Yeah.
That's perfect. Thank you, Saba. Anybody else? Okay, so 3 o'clock it is. We'll keep an eye out for that. I think with Dr. Kalamji leaving, we would still maintain quorum, right, April?
That's correct.
Okay, so we should be fine. Awesome. With that, we can also identify that we called the meeting to order at 1 o'clock, please. I'd like to move on to agenda item 2 and identify any committee members that have a conflict of interest regarding today's list of cases to discuss. Mindy.
Yes, there are two cases I have conflict and I send the form. It's 4A1. 4A1. 2024.
Okay.
And 4B17. 202-400-346.
Just those two?
Yes.
Okay. And I think I saw another hand or someone go up or no? Was it just Dr. Motihari? Any other conflicts to identify? Looks like, Cynthia, you have a hand up.
I do. I have two conflicts to identify. That would be 4B12. And 4B28. And then I should also mention that two other cases where I considered a conflict, but I feel I can still participate. Would you like me to share those numbers still? Or?
You don't have to. Nope.
Okay.
The only declaration you have to make is for a case you feel like you cannot discuss, which are the two you identified?
No, the two that I identified, I cannot discuss.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. That's all you have to do.
Thank you.
Okay, so just those two. And then, Mindy, again, your cases, you said 4A1, and what was the other one, 4B?
Seventeen.
Okay, all right. And then was there any other hands up? Mia?
Yes, I have a conflict with 4A1-2024-00284.
Okay, and that's it?
Yes, thank you.
No, absolutely, thank you. Okay, any other identified conflicts? Okay, so it looks like we should be fine on all of them, with the exception of voting on dismissal. So Dr. Motihari and Dr. Fukami, we'll just have you both abstain. And I believe, April, we should have a quorum with them two abstaining to pass a vote.
Yes, we will.
Okay, so that you just don't have to vote on the vote for dismissal because all of your identified conflicts, or at least one of them, is in that listing. Okay. All right. With that,
thank you.
Yeah, no problem. With that, we are on agenda item 3, discussion, review, as well as voting on our last meeting from December 17th, 2024. Is there any corrections, edits, changes required? Otherwise, is there a motion for approval of the December 17th minutes?
Harris, so moved. Motion to approve.
Okay, so we have a motion by Harris to approve the minutes, second by Calamci. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukali?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Calamci?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for approval of the minutes from December 2024. Thank you all. As we get into our next agenda item, pardon my interruptions here, but I'm expecting someone to come by, so if I have to put us on hold for a quick second to let them in, I will give you a heads up on that. The other thing I wanted to mention as we get into agenda item 4, I'm sure you all appreciate looking at the agenda today. We have a couple of things to discuss after the cases regarding the committee assessment as well as the vacancy that we currently have open. I just want to touch on the committee assessment. I did this with the group last time as well. In taking to heart and consideration some of the comments that were made about how we sort of sequence the cases. So the way I'd like to kind of prepare us all as we move forward with these cases is we'll still do the same thing in identifying cases for dismissal and have that discussion as normal. But then we'll just go right into discussing the cases. So we're going to not identify cases for letter of concern. We'll just handle them as they come up in whatever order they come. What I would like to do, though, is as we get into the discussion of any remaining cases after our dismissal vote, is if any member, and I'm hopeful that every member has a position of how they would like to recommend on a case, whether it be letter of concern, non-disciplinary action, disciplinary. So what I'd like to do to kind of help the discussion maybe move along a little bit more efficiently is when I identify a case for discussion, if there is any member that is considering recommending a letter of concern, I'd like you to identify that in the beginning or as soon as possible so we can have that discussion at that point in time. If there is no identification of a letter of concern, then we'll see if anybody was thinking a non-disciplinary action. And then if there's no comments at that point, we will go into a disciplinary discussion from there. If I have a thought about a letter of concern or non-disciplinary action or disciplinary action, I will follow sort of the same process. My goal is to not get into a discussion, for example, on a disciplinary thing, and then someone turns around and says, well, I was thinking about a letter of concern. So hopefully that process will help us a little bit, and it sort of seems in line with some of the comments that were received in the committee review. So I appreciate some of that feedback as well. So with that, I will go over the list of recommendations for dismissal. So agenda item 4A2, case number 2024-00358. Agenda item 4B5, case number 2024-00129. Agenda item 4B10, case number 2024-00314. Agenda item 4B12, case number 2024-00323. Agenda item 4B13, case number 2024-00329. Agenda item 4B15, case number 2024-00331. Agenda item 4B16, case number 2024-00345. Agenda item 4B17, case number 2024-00346. Agenda item 4B19, case number 2024-00368. Agenda item 4B20, case number 2024-00370. Agenda item 4B21, case number 2024-00373. Agenda item 4B22, case number 2024-00374. Agenda item 4B23, case number 2024-00379. Agenda item 4B24, case number 2024-00380. Agenda item 4B25, case number 2024-00395. Agenda item 4B26, case number 2024-00435. Agenda item 4B27, case number 2024-00452. Agenda item 4B28, case number 2024-00453, and agenda item 4B29, case number 2024-00484. In reviewing that listing, is there any member that would like to remove any of the aforementioned agenda items and cases?
I would like to discuss 4B27.
Okay.
This is Harris.
Yeah, gotcha. So just skip, tell yourself to just kind of be prepared to do that. Okay, so you said 26 or 27, I apologize.
27.
Yeah, 27. Okay, I did have that right. Okay, thank you very much. Anything else, Skip?
Well, there's one more, but I'm curious what other people think, so maybe I'll hold off for a sec.
Okay. Anyone else besides Dr. Harris? Dr. Fukami?
Yes, and this is regarding case 4A2, which I think you had slated for dismissal. Do you have additional or different action plan for that?
Oh, you know what? Yes. So let's go ahead and take that off, Cynthia. That's fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, it was. I did. Thank you for mentioning that. And you're probably thinking the same way I am. So, yeah, appreciate that. So we can remove that from the list. Okay, appreciate that. Anybody else? Good catch, Dr. Fukami. I appreciate it. So, Skip, did you want to throw out what you were thinking?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm hesitant. So, 4B22, I'd like to talk about as well.
Yeah, I actually had a question mark on that one, so maybe we're thinking the same way.
We often do.
So, April, did you get those three removals okay?
Yes, I did. Thank you.
All right. Any other committee members would like to further discuss any of the listed cases for dismissal? Mia, go ahead.
4B20. Although it wouldn't be regarding the doctor mentioned, it would be the original doctor that did the root canal. So I'm not sure if this is the way to do it or not.
Yes, it is. Let's go ahead and pull it so we can discuss it. So I have case number 2024-00370.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think
thank you. Perfect.
So we'll just look to you when we get there, okay?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Nope, you're exactly right. All right. Anybody else? Okay. And April, you're good with the corrected listing?
Yes, thank you.
All right. So I move that we recommend dismissal on the identified cases with those that have been changed. Is there a second?
Harris seconds.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes. So, sorry, I'm stuck. Yes.
Sukami?
Abstain.
Intiaz?
Yes.
Kalamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Lodahari? Right.
Abstain.
And Martin?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you all very much. So those cases will be presented to the board with a recommendation for dismissal. We are now on agenda item 4A1, case number 2024-00284. Is there any recommendation by the committee for letter of concern? Any member?
This is Savak Kalamchi. I looked at this case. This is the one with the injured tongue. I think there's multifaceted issue with that. It went below the standard of care for multiple aspects. One of them is basically there's no documentation on that the tongue was injured. Second is no follow-up in regard to the injured tongue. Third, I think it would have been better if she had referred the patient to specialists to look at that. So these are my concern about this case.
Sure. So were you leaning towards a disciplinary action?
Absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely. So is anybody in a different position than what Dr. Kalamchi mentioned, or are we all on the same page?
I agree.
Okay, it looks like we're all on the same page. I was, thank you, Saba, for that. I heard you loud and clear and agree with you. So I identified violations of 32.12.0.101, 14.23, and 24. Is there a second or adjustment or other identification?
Harris seconds.
Okay. So we have a motion for violation of 32.12.0.101, 14.23, and 24. Second by Harris. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Abstain.
Dodell?
Yes.
Sukami?
Yes.
Intiaz?
Yes.
Kalamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Lodahari?
Abstain.
So motion carries. Thank you all very much. So with the finding of those violations, I would refer, at least from my notes, the committee to page 20. I am also in agreement with what Dr. Kalamchi laid out. I would recommend completion of the CPAP and PIP programs, as well as a fine for $500 for noncompliance with subpoena. So CPAP and PIP, as you all hopefully know by now, as we had pretty good discussions about them previously, are regarding exactly the things that Dr. Kalamchi mentioned, how charting is done, paperwork things, ethics, et cetera. So any discussion about that recommendation or changes or added things?
I'll second it.
Okay, second by Dodell. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Abstain.
Dodell?
Yes.
Sukami?
Yes.
Intiaz?
Yes.
Kalamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Lodahari?
Abstain.
Okay, motion for that disciplinary recommendation carries. Thank you all. We are now on agenda item 4A2, case number 2024-00358, to Dr. Fukami's earlier identification. Cynthia, were you looking at action against FN?
Yes. So okay. I would still dismiss against the licensee. Yes.
I just was making sure that you had identified FN as well.
Right.
Okay.
And I can't remember if it's an entity or owner, to be honest, but I think it's a single owner.
It's a licensee.
Okay. Thank you. And, yep.
So do you want to make a motion for dismissal against the identified licensee?
Yes.
Okay, so we have a motion for dismissal by Fukami against the identified licensee. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Kalamchi. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Azari?
Yes.
Rodel?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kalamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for dismissal. I would, for the committee, recommend pages 282 and 283. And I don't know if FN is identified in those pages or not.
They are.
Okay, good. So I found violations for the committee to consider of 32, 12, 0101, 14, and 24. And so either accept a second to that or further discussion.
Second.
And 17?
Tell me 17, Cynthia.
Employing unlicensed persons to perform or aiding and abetting unlicensed persons in the performance of work.
And is that 120101?
That is 120101.
Gotcha. I see it.
17. Okay. Yep.
So 17 as well. Okay. So let me put that in there just for my notes. Thank you for that.
Jaron, amended second.
Yeah. So, we would need a, and so Cynthia, do you want to second that motion to include 17?
I second the motion.
Okay. So we have recommended violations of 32, 12, 01, 01, 14, 17, and 24. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Masori?
Yes.
Rodel?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kalamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for those violations. Thank you. I had in my notes a recommendation for disciplinary action for FN to include the CPEP program and restitution in the amount of $5,049. So other comments or thoughts about that recommendation or additions?
Second.
Okay. Any other comments? So there's a second for disciplinary action for FN to include completion of the CPEP program as well as restitution in the amount of $5,049. Roll call.
Before I do, I think Seamus has a comment.
Oh, sorry. I didn't even see it. And actually, this has been good telling me there's hands up, and look at there it is. Thanks. Seamus, go ahead. Sorry.
No problem. I just wasn't trying to bother you guys. So if you want to finish your vote and then kick it right back to me just for a second, just indulge me. It's not going to affect your vote right now. So if you can just get through your vote and then indulge me for a second.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, April, go ahead. Thank you.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Intiaz?
Yes.
Kalamji?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that recommendation. Thank you all. Seamus, go ahead.
Thank you very much, committee members. I just noticed that there were some abstentions in the last votes, and I think possibly they should have been recusals, but they were listed as abstentions. If I'm incorrect, please let me know. But I believe that Dr. Motihari possibly had.
You are absolutely correct. So how should they have voted instead of as they did?
Well, I think what's important is that the record reflects, since they've already announced their recusals, they just said, you know, we just said the wrong word. I think it's fine as long as we identify what items those were and then just state that those were recusals and not abstentions.
Right. So and that's, we have done that, and I appreciate that. So just to, on my end, when it comes time to vote, should they just say recused?
Absolutely.
Dr. Caputo, previously, if you would recuse, your name would then be called. That's why I didn't know what to do.
That's completely okay. Just so that the record is clear, and obviously nobody's in trouble. We're just trying to make sure the record is clear. So all the abstentions that were noted by Dr. Motihari, and I believe there may have been one Dr. Fukami possibly.
No, you are absolutely correct. So okay. The abstentions were related to identified recusals. So do you want us just to correct the record and instead of saying abstention, it was just recusal? Because they had identified that the reason they were saying abstain was for recusal.
Yes. And so okay. If we could just state for the record that each time you said abstain, you meant recusal, I think that would cure it and we can move on.
Yeah, that's fine. And April, you're good with that?
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. All right. And I think part of it is too, Mindy, to your point, I just think because we're in a virtual format, it's easier to have something documented.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. But I do appreciate it. Thank you, everyone. All right. So we are now on agenda item 4B1, case number 2023-00341. Let me just see if I have a page number for you all. There's a lot here, as I know you guys know, just as a way of comment. Hold on just a second. I think I heard something. Umar, go ahead.
Anthony, is it worth it to link these together or just do one at a time?
It's interesting you say that. I think that two of them we can link, Umar, but this one I think is a little bit different, and I'm going to try to articulate that when we get there, okay?
Dr. Caputo, again, this is AAG Monahan. I would just suggest that you take each one separately. If you believe that a recommendation should be made, you know, to consolidate them, then what I would do is, much like the board does, handle each one, and then at the very end, decide whether you believe that they should be consolidated for the purposes of disposition.
No, absolutely. And that's exactly the way we're going to approach it. But I appreciate that. All right. So for the committee on this particular case, I would just have you look at page 382. Let's see if that's our start there at least. And it's just a reminder that when we originally addressed this case, we remanded it back for further investigation, which, from my perspective at least, I really am appreciative of the extensive amount of work and effort that Dr. Folk, as the investigator, put into this, because I think it identified some issues that we were wrestling at that time, And I think is kind of why I think we need to address this case the way I'm going to sort of hopefully lay out here. The struggle that I'm having here, which I think we were struggling with last time, is what exactly is going on with this, and I'll just use the generic term, program. Seamus, this is where I kind of needed your help a little bit. The paperwork lists that it's a study club, and it meets the definition of a study club as listed in our rules. From my perspective, it doesn't. And not only does it not meet the definition of a study club, what they said on paper they were not doing in person, and as was identified in the report, they actually were listing themselves or identifying themselves as a dental school, which was neither accredited or had any other type of recognition of its status as a school. This is further identified when in virtually all the records, I don't think I saw anything that said otherwise, that any of the dentists that were in the program that the paperwork identified as a so-called member, they were clearly listed in notes as students. So the concern I have here, Seamus, as well as to the committee, is the representation of the licensee here, JC, who seems to be the principal in this business, and identifying themselves as something that they're not, that clearly was laid out very well by the investigator, as I'm sure we all saw. I think it brings up concern of how the public is treated in this type of environment if they're being told something that's not actual or factual, and I think that's where the struggle comes in. So my initial point on all of this is, where do we start with a licensee who, as we clearly saw from the original complaint, wasn't directly involved in the clinical care per se, even though the administration or performance of that care is concerning, and I think most of us see that, if not all of us. But understanding that this licensee wasn't necessarily the treating dentist, they were in a position of responsibility for the conduct of this program, whatever you call it. And that's kind of where I'm sort of trying to wrap my head around. So, Seamus, I don't know if you can shed some light for us on this idea that this entity says it's a study club, but clearly none of their information that's put out there identifies that. In fact, it identifies quite the opposite. And how we sort of approach that from there. I don't know if you want me to go ahead and take these couple of other questions first, or you want to just jump in.
If I could just maybe jump in real quick, and then, of course, I'll turn it over to Dr. Dodell and Dr. Kalamchi. But what I would encourage you to do in this matter is, like any matter, right, if you believe that there's an issue, right, and that there's an issue with the way that the practice is being run, I would first encourage you to identify any violations, because you've said, right, you've already said you have practice, you see practice violations, you see clinical issues. So point out those clinical issues. If we're having trouble putting all the pieces together, then maybe that requires a referral, right? A referral to DIFI, a referral to consumer protection, a referral to an agency, even within the Attorney General's office, who handles these kind of issues, to help the board flesh that out. And again, if the board does take action on what it has in front of it and then receives, information later from one of those other agencies, it could still take action on those things that it could not determine at that time. If you believe you have determined it, then you know, I would make a motion to that point. If you believe that it should be made in a recommendation in order to effectuate some kind of referral, then I would tell you to do that. But what I also would do is tell you to lay out your concerns very, very clearly regarding what you want the board to look at and why you think it's an issue, so that you create a roadmap. Because it sounds like, from what I'm hearing, is this is a very serious issue for you. So the fact that it's a serious issue means it may be an emergent issue for the board. So I would just help the board to give them a roadmap, you know, in order to help you and help themselves get done what you want to get done. Because not all the information you receive, you may not be able to act on everything you receive. And it may not be things that are within your purview, which those agencies will be able to address.
Thank you. David.
So, you know, I agree with a lot with your concerns. I'm a little confused, maybe need some advice from staff on this. I went on the board's website, and the concept of a restricted license, how would that fit in this situation? Because I agree, they're not a post-secondary institution, or at least an accredited one. I was reading through some of the statutes, and I got the impression a restricted license could be used for a quote-unquote study club or a program like this, but that would put all those students under our jurisdiction because they would then have a license. But I did not see in any of the paperwork any licenses and it did say in some of the statute that the program has to maintain a list of those licenses, linking it to the things. Didn't see anything there. So is my thought pattern about that in the correct thing that if everything was done correctly, a restricted license would work in this situation? So
I'm fine with getting some input as well, David. It's my understanding that anybody that was working at this location as a non-Arizona licensed dentist should have had some type of limited or restricted license. To your point, yes. And there is a process for that. So that is an issue. And I think one of our challenges is, and we're fortunate, Dr. Folk's with us. So, Brian, just sit tight, because I'm going to come to you on some of this. And I appreciate you being here, because you're going to also help us as well. Because I think as we kind of understand how we're going to progress here, it's going to impact several other cases that are on our agenda for today. But that is an issue. So I don't know. Maybe Ryan or someone else on staff can help us to know were any of these dentists or should of any of these dentists that were seeing and treating patients as listed as students, should they have had restricted permits or licenses?
Yes, they should have.
Okay.
All should. You can't practice in the state of Arizona without something.
Right. And to our knowledge, well, I'm going to get to that. And because, Brian, can you answer maybe just quickly to that? From what you saw, were you presented with any information from this facility that any of the dentists that treated any of those patients had a restricted license?
Do you mind if I jump in real quick, Dr. Caputo?
No.
So, Dr. Folk, hold on to that question. And then just so that we can keep the integrity of the investigation, investigators are always allowed to participate in the meetings to provide more help in the investigation, which you guys are called the investigative committee for a reason. And so you can take questions you can ask questions to your investigator and they can respond. The investigator, in this case, Dr. Folk, can provide answers to the question. He just can't pontificate on anything further than answering the question. And he also can't give any recommendation to you. So be careful not to ask for a recommendation as well. With just that, I would turn it back over to you.
Just the facts. So, Brian, can you answer that just as a yes or no? Were you able to identify if any of the listed students, and I realize that a lot of this was challenging with respect to the documentation that you were able to obtain, when you did obtain it, but were any of them identified with a restricted license?
No, none of them had restrictive licenses.
Okay, thank you. Saba?
I have a few questions in regard to that. Now, this institution, SI, whatever, I think they're hiding behind an issue called teaching institution. Now, any teaching institution, like any other, they have a registration, they have all of that, they have a malpractice coverage. This should be all being looked at. Do they have that? Have they have that? If they don't have it, then I consider whoever came from outside the state just as an assistant, because they don't have a license to practice. Dental assistant can't do filling, can't do anything. So those guys, basically, they don't have a license. They practice in dentistry without a license.
Well, we're identifying that for sure, but I think that's the issue, Saba, is that the entity was lists itself under the guise of a study club, but they really don't meet the definition of a study club. The study club talks about doing presentation, and these are not presentations. And in fact, they go on to call them demonstrations, which clearly they're not demonstrations either. They're providing clinical treatment for patients.
I agree with you.
That's been called into question, and that's where some of these complaints have come from. Seamus, did you want to jump in, or can I go to Deb?
I just real quickly, just a point, just a consideration as you're talking about these study clubs. You know, you just kind of pointed it out there as it regards a demonstration. So one thing I want you to think about, again, is, you know, as a committee, when you're making your recommendation factually, do you feel that if a student, as they're listed, someone who's paying to learn this process when they come in here, if they are actually encompassed in that statute as the demonstrator, right? Is it appropriate for the student to be demonstrating to the teacher in a study club situation? So I think it's important for the board to, the committee to consider that, because it's something the board will have to, deal with. And, you know, do you believe that a student should be demonstrating for the purposes of educational purposes? Thank you.
Yep. Deb, did you want to say anything?
Oh, that was an interesting thought to ponder. I know that I just want to make a comment. I appreciate this discussion, but two things. I know that there was an allegation or an inference that there was a deception to the public with respect to them being a dental school or who they actually are. But I wanted to call the attention of the committee to page 373, which is a copy of their consent form. And it does clearly state that it's a, in quote, school-like environment. It's an institute. It's the purpose of teaching, and that patients are being treated by who they're calling as students. So just to be clear that when the rubber meets the road, the patients are informed that this is a teaching situation, and I don't see anywhere in their actual official paperwork that they're professing to be an accredited dental school. So I think there's an advertising issue versus what actually happens when they are face to face and getting ready to treat patients. That's an observation that I made. Secondarily, this is more a question that I have on how this case is going to be adjudicated with respect to the statute that currently exists after being passed in the 2024 legislative session that really talks about the entity or the school, as it were, or the program or the course provider has to maintain a file. Because that law didn't go into effect, because that stipulation didn't go into effect until last year, what really would be the responsibility or the culpability of the course provider with respect to their students acquiring the restricted permit, as was the previous process? And that's just more of a question.
Well, I think that was answered, wasn't it? When we asked about that earlier, as Ryan said, if you're not a licensed dentist in Arizona and you come here to see and treat patients, or I should say treat patients, you need a restricted license.
Right. And my question then goes one step further. If that's true, who has the culpability for those individuals not getting a restricted license? And since they don't live in Arizona, how do you,
So you're saying, is it just on, are you saying that it's just on potentially the dentist themselves to get that restricted license, or is it on the entity where they're getting that training?
That's my question.
Right. What would you think?
Or the entity.
I think the course provider has a responsibility.
Well, I think that's pretty. I mean, how would the person get out here if they didn't know about the course, right?
Right, right.
And I would think that for them.
And they would rely upon the course provider to lead them down the path of what's required to be in their course. So, but according to the law as it existed when these events were happening, how is it presented in the, where is it in the law that would have allowed culpability to land on the course provider?
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. I guess that's it's a big stretch for me to say that a person's going to come out and participate in a course, pay almost $20,000, and it's their responsibility to get their own license, and they're informed of that. And if they don't get the license, that's their fault. When we didn't see any paperwork to that effect, that's a big stretch. I hear what you're saying, but I'd love to see that produced. That's obviously going to be a different conversation, because we don't have that information.
I have a comment that might be related to that, if I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
So when we're talking about false advertising, which was one of the comments that was brought up both within this committee but also within this report, I know there's been some discussion as to how that impacted patients. I think there's another note in here about maybe some false claims about being a surgeon. Neither of those, I agree with Deb. I'm not sure that those are as concerning to me as the fact that I think the false advertising here pertains to the so-called students that were actually engaged and paid significant monies to attend this course. That's where I would see that false advertising is the strongest and most concerning. You know, I think if a student, a dentist from another state sees that website, there's not much there to, there's a lot of misunderstanding that can happen that I think that they think this is indeed a dental school. And I think that is probably, I think, false advertising in and of itself. And to that end, I still think that the school did indeed, or the program had the responsibility of full disclosure to those incoming trainees that they were not indeed an accredited dental school or training program, as supported by the U.S. Department of Education, et cetera, accredited third-party organization. So, and that restricted licensure is part of that as well. I agree with the earlier comment that this not a study club, not a dental school, in essence, it actually makes it simpler. It boils down to this is basically a practice just like any others. We should consider it that way. It's an entity or practice where essentially the dentists who are working in the practice are unlicensed, and they have been performing work, just like we were discussing the other case, as unlicensed providers on these live patients.
Right. I think I don't think the responsibility lies only on that unlicensed dentist, but go ahead, Seamus.
I apologize. Maybe I can help you out here. Nobody that we understand at this point was holding a restricted permanent volunteer health registration. So
correct.
You don't have authority over them at this point. So
we do or not.
The licensed dentists who do not hold a license here, who came in here for those programs, yes, they are subject to those programs and they should have done it. And both are held to the same standard, the provider and that individual. However, if they did not hold that permit, then the question of whether you have jurisdiction is that you most likely do not. If you would like to refer a complaint to their, you know, recommend referrals of complaints to their regulatory agency in their state, that would be appropriate. But that would be the extent of it. So really what you are dealing with is the culpability of the licensees that you regulate here in Arizona.
Yeah, thank you. Abba, go ahead.
I think I agree with Cynthia about the false advertisement. That's a big deal as far as I'm concerned. That I agree with Cynthia.
Right. And you're saying false advertising from the perspective of how these dentists are coming here, right? That they're being told they're coming to a dental school program that's going to train them how to place implants. Is that what you mean?
Correct.
Yes. Totally. And I think that does fall squarely on the culpability of the dentist. Hold on just a second. I got someone banging on my door, and I don't know where my son is. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. All right. So I'm going to try to unpack this a little bit. I think the issue here is exactly as we've been discussing. This is a misleading presentation both to, I think, the dentists that come to take this program as well as to the patients who are going into it. To meet any of the statutory issues, I'm looking at violations of 32-1201-14. I'm also looking at 20B. And I'm also looking at 23 and 24. And the issues with 23 and 24 are pretty much clearly identified in the reports in that requests for records were typically not responded to, and it took several attempts to get them. So it's pretty clear in pretty much any circumstance involving any of the complaints where this licensee is identified that the failure to comply with the subpoena in a timely manner was violated. And there's clear identification in pretty much any of the records that we were provided to review that the maintenance of records is poor. And generally speaking, most records are incomplete. And I think there's another concern there as we see many examples where there's like, for example, a consent for surgery where nothing is listed and the patient merely signed off on it. But there was no witness or other doctor that indicated that they reviewed that with them. So I struggle with the fact that maybe in some cases the patients really didn't even know the type of procedures they were going to receive or what was involved with those procedures. So that's what I identify. Are there any other identified statutory violations by the committee, or are we okay with at least starting there?
How about the local anesthesia, doctor? I mean,
That would fall under 14.
14, okay, yeah. Yeah, because I think they violated exactly what the recommended dose by even the manufacturer.
No, I mean, that's clear. Unfortunately, yeah. In some of those cases, as we've been discussing, it's not necessarily the licensee. So I'm trying to just focus on issues regarding the licensee in this particular complaint versus how the cases actually were conducted, but I don't disagree with you. But generally for this specific complaint and this licensee, I'm identifying, 32, just to repeat quickly, 32-1201-01, 14, 20, B, 23, and 24. Any other, Cynthia, your hand's up. Go ahead.
Yes. I think if you look at page 608, there was another violation. The last one was the one I thought should be added. I think it is ARS 32-1263-D10. And if you look, that would be the one engaging repeated irregularities in building. I think one thing that stood out, there were no ledgers with any of the records.
No, I know. And that's another action to take. And we may want to consider that independently, but that would be 16 on 3212-0101.
As part of the licensee. So.
Well, right. So we would have 14, 16, 20B, 23 and 24. I'm completely with you on that. And that's another issue to discuss as well. But I do appreciate you bringing it up because you're correct. Anything else?
Can I, this is Harris. Might I suggest that there's three of these cases that fall with separate agenda items. Perhaps we find for disciplinary action on all three of them. And make recommendations on all three of them. And then at the end of doing that, we make a recommendation to the board for some sort of letter of concern on top of the disciplinary action, illuminating issues we find with how this educational operation is occurring.
Dr. Harris, I think that's a great idea, but I was also suggesting that assumed to a letter of concern, if you had those issues, that you would put them in a recommendation in the form of having the board refer this to the appropriate agencies for investigation. Would that be appropriate as well? Would that capture what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just trying to, we're kind of talking in circles a little bit, so I was thinking maybe we should just find for violations in all three of them, then make recommendations, which I think will be similar in all three of them, and then make a recommendation for action towards the educational separately.
Perfect. No, I think that's a great idea. Thank you.
Okay. And I'm totally with you, Skip. I just feel like this particular case kind of really laid it out, so I'm glad it was the first case for us to discuss. But you're correct. There are connections to other cases that are identified. Though we do have a second licensee who we – need to deal with separately, as Seamus has kind of directed. So as far as that listing of violations, is the committee okay with that? Any additions, changes, or is there a second?
Harris seconds.
Okay, so we have a motion for finding of violations of 3212-0101, 14, 16, 20B, 23, and 24, with a second by Harris. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
Antias?
Yes.
Calamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Go to hurry.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the finding of those violations. Now, Skip, to your point, did you say you wanted to go to the other cases and look at those for violations and then look at the disciplinary recommendations, or do that differently?
I guess I feel like we could very quickly apply the same violations findings for 4B2 and 4B4, with the exception, I think 4B4 might have some restitution, and then we could move on from there.
Okay, so make disciplinary recommendations here is what you're saying?
Yes, sir. Just to say, let's vote on those other two for disciplinary action.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well, yeah, you should go ahead and vote. Okay. All right, so then the next case involving the identified licensee is 4B, agenda item 4B2, case number 2023-00488. To your point, I have violations of 14 and 24, so that would already be included, correct?
Correct, and the failed subpoena again.
Yes, thank you very much, and let me add that. Now, Seamus, to that point, if there are three separate complaints with a failed subpoena compliance, can those each be individual fines then per complaint?
Thank you, Dr. Caputo. And again, maybe staff can talk about this better, but so for the failure to respond to subpoena, it depends, right? So they'll either open another case and issue that, or they will combine it into whatever order or consent agreement that they offer, that they issue or offer. Does that make sense? Probably not.
But I guess would we make the recommendation for an individual fine for each complaint, keeping it separate to each complaint? They're effectively 500 for each complaint, or just 500 for all three complaints?
So if they're different, like if you're doing one against a licensee, one against another licensee, then yes, you're going to want to keep those separate. If they're for the same licensee, then you can consolidate those.
Okay. All right. So then the last one, Skip, would be in committee, obviously. Sorry about that. Actually, let's see. There's two more. There's then 4B4, agenda item 2024-00094. I just saw a violation of 32-1201-014 on that one. And 23, so you're correct there. Anything else on that one, or you saw the same?
The same, except that third one, I think, potentially will involve restitution, but that's, yes, the violations are the same.
Okay, and then the last one was...
I'm sorry, Dr. to interrupt, Dr. Caputo. Did you say violations 14 and 23?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And then it looks like the only one that is only 14 from my notes, so this would be the last one, agenda item 4B9, 2024-00297. Did anybody find any other violations on that one?
24.
On that one?
Yep.
Okay, that's fine. So... And did you have a comment about something else, Cynthia?
I did, and I don't know if this is the right place for it. I know these are the violations. Are we going to talk about other issues like the business entity is not registered and our recommendations to refer this to the board for other action like
so that'll be afterward? So what we want to do is just see, are the violations in line? Are they with what for all of the complaints against this licensee?
Okay.
Or involving this licensee, I should say. We're just...
I get it.
Yeah, okay. All right, so you have 24. So, April, on 4B9, case number 2024-00297, it's 32-1201-014 and 24.
Perfect, thank you.
So, the noncompliance with subpoena applies to... 4B1, 4B2, and 4B4. But that's going to be one, to Seamus's point, that would just be one $500 fine towards this licensee. Hold on just a second. David?
So I guess the question is, was one subpoena sent out for all of these, or was multiple subpoenas sent out?
I think it would have been multiple because we had different investigators. But to Seamus's point, if it's an individual, you only can do one.
Per case, correct? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, but I thought you just said one. That's what I was asking you before, is can we do for each case? And I thought I heard you say no, just one. For the licensee.
Oh, no, I apologize. I was just saying you could consolidate them if they're for the same licensee because they're multiple violations. I apologize. So, no, Dr. Dodell is right. Your understanding is correct. If it's the same licensee, multiple cases that they did not respond to their subpoena, then you can issue multiple. But you can also combine those into one order. For the failure to do it twice or three times, whatever you want to do.
Okay. So I'm fine because we're combining as we are. So for these ones, April. It's 4B1, 4B2, and 4B4, all involved 32-12-01-01-23. So then it would be a combined fine of $1,500 that's being recommended. And then for 4B2, for 4B4, there is restitution in the amount of...
Why don't we vote on at least the disciplinary or non-disciplinary for those, get that out of the way, and then we can...
Restitution? Okay, yeah. I'm fine with that. I appreciate all the direction because I'm telling you, I really struggled with this one. So I had recommendations of disciplinary to include the CPAP and PIP programs, as well as.
I don't think we voted on disciplinary yet.
Yeah, we need to vote.
No, right. That's what we're doing right now. We're making a disciplinary recommendation.
We haven't voted on them being.
Violations.
Oh, the violations. Okay, gotcha. All right, so we have the listed violations, and I'll just go over them generally, and then they'll be combined because they include. The first case includes all of them. So 4B1, case number 2023-00341 is violations of 32-12-01-01, 14-16-20B, 23, and 24. 4B2 includes all of those that were already mentioned in 4B1. And then in 4B4, it's 14 and 23, which is included in the aforementioned. And then in 4B9, it's 32-12-01-01, 14 and 24. So the violations encompassed in all of those combined are 32-12-01-01, 14-16, 23, and 24. Everybody good with that?
And 20B.
Oh, sorry, and 20B. Correct.
Harris seconds for all four of those disciplinary action.
Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Calamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motohari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for those violations with recommendation for disciplinary action. So what is that disciplinary action look like? I was recommending completion of the CPAP program and the PIP program.
April has her hand up.
Oh, sorry. My bad. I'm coming. Go ahead, April.
No, sorry. For clarification, are you making one recommendation for all four?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that was based on that. That's the direction we're going, right, Skip?
Yeah, I think we can do that, except for the 4B4, which I think has restitution. But the other three are very similar.
Yeah, and I agree. Oh.
And I think 4B9 has restitution, too.
Correct. So restitution will be applied directly to the case. But the disciplinary recommendation will apply for all four. Is that good for you, April, in terms of just understanding?
Yes, now I understand. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate it. What's happening here?
Which includes a consolidation, right?
Correct. Yeah, so it'll end up. It's just so that when people know, Seamus, where they're looking at, particularly for restitution, they'll know where it's coming from.
Perfect. Perfect. No, you guys are doing a great job. This is a very difficult case.
Yep, no, I understand. And I appreciate that. All right, so on the disciplinary recommendation, like I said, completion of the CPAP and PIP programs. And then I saw something, I don't know. I mean, I know it's, but I'm looking specifically at case number 2024-00297, which is agenda item 4B9. But I was going to recommend CE in implants through the Credit Cares program. Was anybody else on that one with me on that, or did you think differently?
I was going to recommend CEs on implants, CEs on charting, CEs on restorative, CEs.
Okay. Let me lay this out and see what you think. So charting and, you know, record keeping and all that is going to get addressed through the CPEP and PIP ethics as well. And then I had 20 CEs through the Credit Cares program and diagnosis and treatment planning of implant, implant placement, and restoration options for implants. Does that cover what you were thinking, or did you have other things?
No, that about covers it.
How about pharmacology?
And you're talking about from the perspective of local anesthesia?
Exactly.
So the local anesthesia I struggled with against SAW because it wasn't necessarily the licensee, it was the people doing the cases. Do you know what I'm saying?
All right.
But I do bring it up in another situation, and maybe that'll – but I'm with you because – but it was mostly the actual treating dentist in those circumstances that were – and I'm – believe me, I'm not in disagreement. I mean, in one case, there was, I think, 20 cartridges of local anesthetic administered, a significant amount. So I'm totally 100% with you. I just don't know in this particular case I saw it with this licensee. Dr. Motihari.
Dr. Caputo, I have little difficulty understanding because if they are considered, if they consider themselves teaching facility, that means everything would go under the primary provider, which he's responsible for everything. So it, one way or another, are they teaching? Are they consider themselves teaching? So one person is responsible for everything.
Right. So we're going to get, that's our next step.
Okay.
Andy, so right now what we're doing is making a recommendation just based on the actions of the licensee that we can identify through the reports that are presented to us. And then to the point that Dr. Harris was making earlier, we're going to go back after this part is done, and then we're going to make referrals.
Okay.
And it should address what you're identifying and discussing right now. Skip, go ahead.
Why don't we just add anesthesia too? I mean, there's problems with every one of these cases. Like, I mean, I think it's very reasonable to add CEs and anesthesia just based on the fact that he was supervising somebody that gave anesthesia poorly.
Okay.
And at least two of them, there was poor anesthesia.
I totally get it. Like I said, I just was sort of looking at the licensee directly at this point, but I'm with you.
I would add CEs and anesthesia as well.
Okay. So how about what I had in another recommendation, four CEs in local anesthesia administration.
Sounds good to me.
I second that.
Okay, so here's what we're proposing as a disciplinary recommendation consolidated, okay? For all of the identified cases, it's completion of CPAP and PIP. With respect to 4B2, case number 2023-00488, case number 4B4, agenda item 4B4, case number 2024-00094, and then agenda item 4B9, case number 2024-00297. We are looking at the CPEP and the PIP, but then specifically for 4B4 and 4B9, we're looking at four CEs in the area of local anesthesia administration and 20 CEs through the Credit CARES program. And I guess maybe what we should do is just make this easy, because we can do it all through Credit CARES, right? So let's do 24 CEs through the Credit CARES program in local anesthesia administration, diagnosis and treatment planning of implants, implant placement, and restoration options for implants. Okay?
Plus $1,500 for failure to respond to three subpoenas.
We got that. And then...
seconds.
Okay.
I have a question. Are we allowed to say until this finish, the CE is not allowed to do any implant or anything else? Or
absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
So you wouldn't want to include a practice restriction on any implant treatment or placement until the CE is completed?
Yes, I think I agree with you with that.
I'm fine with that. And so we'll add that practice restriction. So we have 24 CEs through the Credit CARES program in local anesthesia, diagnosis and treatment planning of implants, implant placement, restoration options for implants, and practice restriction until that CE is completed.
And 4 hours of local anesthesia.
Well, that's part of the total, because the Credit CARES program can do all of that. We're directing them what to do. And that's included in that.
Harris seconds the amendment.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kalamji?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that disciplinary recommendation. We already had, and Skip, just to clarify your previous point, we already had the noncompliance with subpoena in there, right, April? You have that?
That's correct.
All right, so the next piece is for agenda item 4B4, case number 2024-00094, there's a restitution in the amount of $7,600.
Yes, Harris seconds.
Okay. Further discussion on the restitution? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kalamji?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the restitution on that agenda item. Our next one is agenda item 4B9, case number 2024-00297, and for restitution in the amount of $20,500.
Harris seconds.
Okay, further discussion on that amount? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kalamji?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that restitution on that agenda item. Thank you all. All right, last piece. So, Skip, back to what you were saying about referrals. And then I think Seamus was helping guide that somewhat. And this, I think, goes back to Cynthia's point, too, about the billing irregularities. So should we make a referral for the billing issues? For example, do we make a recommendation for a fraud investigation through the Arizona AG's office on that, Consumer Fraud Act, or do we do something different, or is there other ideas?
I think we could recommend to the board that they refer to the appropriate law enforcement agency for investigation. I don't think we have to. Maybe they can decide that. I mean, there's a couple of things here. There's billing irregularities. There's false advertising. There's practicing without a license. There's a number of things that need to be qualified.
So as far as the referral is concerned, how would you put that together?
I make a motion that the dental board consider referring this licensee and the practice operation to the appropriate law enforcement agencies to investigate billing irregularities, false advertising, and practicing dentistry without a license.
I'd like to make a little modification to that. Okay, Skip. The entity is in their own practice. I think we need to make it clear that they have, quote-unquote, students practicing without a license. It's not the entity that's not practicing.
Or dentists practicing without a license. How does that sound?
I think dentists without a license in that practice is better.
And, David, are you okay with that?
Yeah, I just want to make the clarification between.
Right, it's not the entity; it's that right. there are dentists that are.
It's both. There. It's both. It's the entity and the students.
No, I understand. Yeah, and I that's kind of what we've been wrestling with, Cynthia.
I like the current phrasing. Are we allowed to make recommendations for other referrals after
Absolutely. No, we can include it all.
Oh, well, I can include another one. Okay. Then I think as well, I think it was pointed out in this that the business entity is not registered with the state of Arizona.
Now, there was a question I had about that as well, Cynthia, and I kind of chatted with Ryan about this. But, Ryan, if I understood you correctly when we did discuss this, that's not a requirement based on how they're – because the business entity is not the – practice, correct? I think that's what I sort of understood you telling me, but can you elaborate a little bit on what we were discussing?
Yeah, and April, feel free to jump in. So I think that both of these entities, I think there's several, or a couple anyway, are 100% owned by dentists. And if they're 100% owned by dentists, they do not have to be a registered business entity. I think at one time they weren't completely owned by dentists. And they should have at that time, but now that they're 100% owned, they don't have to. So I wouldn't go backwards to fix what wasn't caught before. But April, I don't know if you want to provide any more color to my comment.
Well, I'm not sure what change you're recently talking about. As far as I understood, they are not 100% owned by a dentist.
They're not. Okay, so then they would have to be registered business entities, and Dr.
I think Dr. Folk knows for certain since he did most of the research on that.
Okay. Brian, can you speak to that?
Yes. At current, the implants are not owned by dentists completely, the implant company.
And you're talking, that's that SI implant?
SI, the actually it's just SI.
Okay.
However, the practice and the institute are both now 100% owned by dentists. There is a trust and a few other things, so there could be another non-entity within that. But presently, there is at least a dentist named on everything, and we don't know exactly what's in the trust as the other owner for the institute.
So I think maybe to your point then, Cynthia, I think it would be appropriate to include that because then that's what we could determine. Does that sound fair?
Then I have another request, please. My other concern was, I think you already mentioned it, there was at least one anesthetic record that reflected a 9-hour intubated general anesthesia for a ASA3 medically compromised patient, with zero to no workup conducted prior to the administration of that anesthetic. Now, I think that there was no adverse occurrence per se, but I don't know if there's a role for the dental board to forward that case as a matter of concern to the dental board, or excuse me, the nursing board. I don't know if that's the proper route for them to do that.
I apologize. I think at this time we are just considering issues that may be outside. I just don't want to muddy it. If we're going to name multiple agencies, it may get hard for staff to track all of this. So maybe we just take it one at a time and address the potential criminal and or issues regarding consumer protection, and then move on to any other regulatory agency, which may involve a health regulatory agency.
All right. So, Cynthia, does that make sense to you?
Yeah. No, I'm happy to take it as a separate issue. I just didn't know if this was our only time to bring it up.
Oh, no, no. No. We're taking this in pieces. So there's – but I absolutely hear you. And I had some other concerns about some of that as well, which might be another way to address it, to your point. Okay. So we'll hold off on that for right now. We'll include your referral for being a registered business entity, because I think that's certainly within the scope here. So, April, did you get the listing that Dr. Harris provided with the correction or the clarification that we're looking at the entity for how it accepts dentists who are not licensed in Arizona, as well as the dentists who are working in these clinics that are not licensed in Arizona?
So what I have is to refer them to local law enforcement for billing irregularities, false advertising, and dentists practicing without an Arizona license, as well as researching the business entity registration portion.
Correct. Okay. Does that sound accurate and or acceptable to the committee?
Did April say law enforcement?
She did.
Yes, that's what I heard.
Wouldn't it probably be more generic than, because some of these items are not law enforcement, as in it'd be a consumer protection agency. That's not a law enforcement agency.
So are you, what would be maybe appropriate?
Agency.
I'm not sure you need to be so specific. I think the committee is, everybody's captured what the committee is going for. I'm not sure you need to be so specific in this instance.
So what I'm hearing you say, Seamus, is by making the recommendation for referral on these issues, that's enough for the board to have an understanding of what we're looking for.
Yes, this has been a robust conversation. I clearly understand that.
April, were you saying something? I dismissed you. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So
Dr. Falk has his hands up for a while.
Oh, sorry. Brian. I thought that was a leftover. That's why I didn't. Oh, and see, he put it down.
I just had one comment when looking at some statutes just regarding your nurse practitioners doing anesthesia. The statute sort of reads that the dentist doctor is still responsible for the patient's well-being and would also be responsible for knowing the patient's overall health and time within anesthesia and everything like that.
And that is correct. And we're going to get back to that, because to Seamus's point, it was sort of outside. And Dr. Fukami just wanted to make sure we addressed it, which we were going to do forthwith. So I appreciate that, because that is you're absolutely correct. But thank you for saying that, because there is a question I also have for you related to that. All right. So that referral listing, are we good with that?
I'll second it if you need that.
Do we need to second and take a vote, or we could just make the referral?
As long as everybody is in agreement, maybe just take a voice vote.
That's fine. So let's just take a vote on the listing of those referral items that were mentioned previously.
Okay. Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asori?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kalanji?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, so that is approved. Thank you all very much. So, Brian, question for you. In your review of these cases, and again, thank you for all your hard work. I really appreciate everything you put into this. There are a number of dentists that are identified, and I know you kind of had some challenges in obtaining that information. There's one dentist that seems to be identified pretty frequently. If I say to you, Dr. K, do you know who I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Were you able to identify that licensee's full name, and are they a licensed dentist in Arizona?
Yes, they are, and we have his full name.
Okay. We just did. I didn't see it in the records, and that's why I was asking. So do we know, and I don't know if staff can see this, and I don't know, Seamus, if you're okay with me asking, but do we know if this dentist has any kind of sedation permit?
I believe I did check into it. I believe April has more. She's got the keyboard at her fingers. I believe that he could hit a 1304, I think he has. And I'm not sure if he had a 1302.
So another issue here that Cynthia has identified really well, and I felt exactly the same way, is that this entity was partnering with a anesthesia company, and I think, Brian, help me out here, was it AZ Anesthesia or something like that?
I believe it was. I think it's all CRNAs.
No, correct. I think it was just something like that, which would have caused that dentist, any dentist working with them, to either have a 1304 or other sedation or anesthesia permit per rule. And to your point, which I appreciate you identifying, and I know that Cynthia's others feel the same way, when you have an outside anesthesia provider coming in, you still have a level of responsibility for that patient. And it seems as though that was shirked. So there is another issue here. My question for the committee is, do we have identified licensees, or do we just manage this as an issue towards this licensee in terms of how anesthesia services are administered in that facility for their patients? And Cynthia, I'll look to you to see, because I know you've been thinking about this. Do you have any thoughts about that? Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, I don't know what the modus operandi is at this point, given the changing of the rules and the intervening times. I realize that what was in effect at the time of this case, and I have to look up the exact dates on it, were, to your point, still tracking along the 1304 permit requirements.
Well, the level of responsibility hasn't changed. Even with the new rules coming into. So a dentist still has to get some type of permit or have a to work with a to work with the QAP, because that's what the new rules sort of say. But having said that, I'm just wondering, I'm not so much worried about that because that seems to sort of be there, but trying to capture what you wanted to address in terms of looking at that. Or do we have enough on our plate that we just kind of put this off to the side, understanding, yeah, it's a huge concern, but we maybe just don't have enough information to further pursue it? Or would you like to see something, some sort of action happen?
So let me ask you, I need to look, is the licensee that was involved with the case that I'm speaking about one of the licensee that you thought the last name starts with a K?
Say that again. What about that?
So let me look up. Do you know which licensee was involved in that case with the 9 hours. Yes.
Committee members, I would just recommend, we're getting into a little point where we're almost adjudicating a case right now. If you believe that a case needs to be opened based on what you've seen, I would just encourage you to open a case into that matter and have it adjudicated.
That was my – thank you, I apologize for interrupting. That was actually what I was getting at, which is I also had a note here that the other two licensees, I think you've alluded to one of them, there was a recommendation to potentially open cases against them, and they may be the ones that are more involved.
Right, so that's what I'm – that was my question to you, is how you wanted to handle this. So what would you like to do at this point, understanding where we're at now and what we've accomplished thus far? Would you like to open up a new complaint into Dr. K? Or to your point, Brian, is there a licensee identified in the case that Dr. Fukami's mentioning? Did we lose Brian?
Dr. Falk, you're on mute. Dr. Falk? You're muted right now.
Julie, do you know by chance?
Can you be please specifically tell me which case number with
it's
the
not a case number. I think it's a patient. It's a patient chart, right, Cynthia?
Yeah, it's patient DP.
Do you have a case number maybe for him?
Can I have a case number, please?
Oh, the case that's referenced in?
Yes.
So it would be page 2083. I don't know if you can look that up, Julie.
What's the case?
It would be under case 4B1, and it's page 2083 for patient initials DP. But
thank you. I'm looking at it now.
There's an additional case. I don't know if I was muted. There's an additional case of an ASA3 that went over 3 hours also. And I don't recall off the bat which provider also did that one.
Do you know if they were identified, Brian?
Somewhere in the 6,000 pages of all the reports that are yes, I believe I did. There were several cases where there was no doctor listed at all in the records, and those records were you can't tell. But I believe that both those cases had somebody listed.
Okay.
So can I refer you as well to page 604, where I think Dr. Folk has a recommendation for a potential new investigation. If is that possible to say we're going to recommend an open investigation against those two individuals that are named there in reference to the cases that are here, and then we move on?
Right. So is that what – so you would like to see – and that's, I guess, what we're getting at. The action you'd like to see taken is a new case opened.
Is that – yeah, I think that makes sense here.
Okay.
And then I think it'll be revealed. So if they're on one of these, then it'll come up.
All right. So do you have but you don't have a name, do you?
No. For the two providers?
Do you have a dentist identified in any of those?
That's part of the problem. It's not on
there. No, I understand. Because I think that's
that's why I wanted to refer, just send it over the
Dr.
relevant.
Caputo,
yes.
If you look at page 2153, it's the initial CB, Dr. CB.
Okay, because that's the anesthesia record?
Correct.
Okay, so it's the CB. Well, we're already kind of going to be talking about CB in just a second here.
Okay.
All right. So understanding that, Cynthia, do you want to just hold off?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think we'll get here on all of this. I just, there's so much to address. It gets a little overwhelming if you would agree.
Yes.
All right. So at this point, then we are done with the cases listed for JC. Am I accurate on that? Is everybody good on that, or am I missing anything?
I believe you've addressed them all.
Okay. So we are now on agenda item 4B3, case number 2024-00011. And let me just make sure. Yes. And I identified violations of 32120101, 14, 23, and 24. And so to the committee, does anybody have other identifications or would like to discuss any of those in greater detail? Are you good with the listing?
There a second.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Intiaz?
Yes.
Kalamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the finding of those violations. I'm looking at disciplinary recommendation to include completion of the PIP program, 4 CEs in local anesthesia administration, 12 CEs in oral conscious sedation to include patient selection, drug administration, monitoring, emergency preparedness and management. And then $500 fine for non-compliance with subpoena. And then there is a restitution addition. But to address the disciplinary recommendations as listed, is there a further comment or discussion?
Harris, second.
Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kalamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, so motion carries for that disciplinary recommendation as well as the NCS fine of $500. And then also I identified restitution in the amount of $5,000. Any comments on the $5,000? Let me just see. There's a page reference there. Yeah, that's identified on page 2757. Is there a second to that restitution?
Second.
Second? Was that Kalamchi?
Yes.
Okay. David, did you have a question? I'm sorry.
I just have another issue with this after you finish this part.
Okay. All right. So can we take a roll call on the motion for restitution in the amount of $5,000, first by Caputo, second by Kalamchi?
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
MGS?
Yes.
Kalamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that restitution request. David?
You were referring to page 2755 before, right?
I said 5-7, but go ahead. I'll go to 5-5. What do you see on 5-5?
So the part right at the top of 5-5 where it says there was a doctor's listed as the instructor does not have a license. So kind of like we did with JC, do we need to make another recommendation to announce the outside for this thing too?
I'm going to say no, because I think we pretty much had that discussion already and it gets covered. But I'm open if others think differently.
And I agree with the conversation, but we were doing that in reference to the complaints against JC. Now we're on CB, so I didn't know.
I get it. I just think it's all in one and the same. And so the referral, because that was included with the referral, and I think that will be addressed through that referral, if that makes sense.
No, and I'm good. I just want to know if we logistically had to handle them differently. That's all.
Yeah, well, let me see. Do other members agree with that, or do we need to do something separately for CB?
Or do we have to duplicate it for CB is what I'm saying.
Yeah, sure, and that's fair. Do we need to duplicate it for CB?
I think CB is listed on the board for this organization, right?
No, yes, they are. Well, let's ask Seamus. Seamus, what do you think?
I would ask April. I think it's more of a practical question.
Okay.
You know, April, are you able to capture this, or would it be more appropriate for them to identify each one as they go through?
Well, the question is more of there is an issue with a potential unlicensed dentist treating a patient and involved in patient care. So we, as you know, had a robust discussion about this in the previous case, which is connected to this, because these dentists are all part of the same situation, if you will. The question was, do we duplicate our action recommendations for this licensee, or is it accomplished? Is what we're trying to do accomplished already?
If you're handling the cases separately, then I would say do it again. You would duplicate it. If you're not, don't duplicate it.
Okay. So, April, are you good with that recommendation for referral where we had those listings in the area of unlicensed dentists treating patients to add that to this?
So the same referral from the last one?
Correct.
We would like this licensee to also be referred?
Yeah.
Okay.
And David, is that accomplished what you were looking at?
No, that's why I was more a joke thing that I just want to make sure this was covered.
Yeah, no, totally with you, and I get it. Yep. So we will do that, and that's been accomplished. Thank you, April. Thank you, David. Other comments on this particular case? Okay, so we are now on agenda item 4B6, case number 2024-00181. Here, I identified a violation of 32.12.01.01.14.
Harris, seconds.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kalamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the finding of that violation. And for the committee, I'm looking at page 6074. I was going to make a disciplinary recommendation or propose a disciplinary recommendation to include 12 CEs in diagnosis, treatment planning, and restoration of implants, and then a restitution in the amount of $3,600.
Second.
Okay. Other discussion? Roll call.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the restitution amount?
I'm sorry. $3,600. And that's, and let me just verify, April, because I just want to make sure. I think it's on that page. Yeah, that's on 6074. That is listed there.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kalamchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for that disciplinary recommendation with restitution. Thank you all. We are now on agenda item 4B7, case number 2024-00243AO. I'm open here. So is anybody thinking of a letter of concern?
This is Kappas. I had put down a letter of concern and at the very most, non-disciplinary.
Okay. Anybody else for letter of concern?
Martin, I had letter of concern.
Okay.
Dodell is great.
Cynthia?
I was either letter of concern or a non-disciplinary.
Okay. Skip?
Yeah, I was between letter of concern and dismiss. I'm still unclear exactly what caused this reaction. I mean, there is a small chance that this is no fault to anybody.
And while I don't disagree, I think this kind of supports a discussion we've been having already. And I was actually very appreciative for Dr. Folk's comment earlier, because if he can see this indication as clearly as he did, there's no reason why any other licensed dentist shouldn't be able to see it. And that is that ultimately the treating dentist is responsible for the safety and well-being of a patient that they're treating in their office, regardless of what's being done. And I think the thing that was a little unsettling to me was the comment by the licensee that they're not involved or responsible, I'm sort of paraphrasing, for the thermoregulation of a patient. And to me, that should be the heart of a letter of concern, is that you are responsible for a patient that comes to you for treatment, and you should be having a discussion with the people you have involved in their care, whether it's a lab tech coming in, a denturist coming in, or an anesthesiologist coming in. And you should be aware and understanding of their health conditions and concerns, and be a little more connected to the case. I just found it dismissive to say, and I'm not saying that's what they intended, but the implication certainly was, it's not my issue, and so I don't feel responsible for what happened. And that kind of just was a little unsettling for me. I don't know if other people felt the same way.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I'm willing to vote for a letter of concern just based on the attitude. All I was suggesting is, I think there's a chance this isn't a thermoregulation issue. And if it wasn't a thermoregulation issue, then it would have been unavoidable, no matter how attentive the dentist was. But I'm completely for a letter of concern reminding them that they are fully invested in this patient's care.
Okay. Was that what others were thinking in the letter of concern, or were there other issues or things that you identified. Deb?
Yeah, that's Dr. Harris actually had right exactly what I have in my notes. That was my main concern, was that the dentist should be responsible and know what's going on and why.
Okay. Any disagreement or any other thoughts by the committee? Cynthia.
It's not, I think maybe a little more nuanced than that, because I actually thought they tried to help and manage and took a personal responsibility afterward. So I didn't feel that they completely, you know, said, this is out of my hands. I don't have anything to do with it. I think I saw that lack of attention maybe on the front end, where I felt like a lot of the medical issues that were, you know, clearly highlighted on their form beforehand weren't addressed prior to the anesthetic being conducted. And not that I think that necessarily contributed here, but that was where I got concerned. So
your thought was more involvement up front?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not preventative, right?
Right. I mean, I don't think anybody's arguing that, and I don't disagree. Now, I will say, I understand the complexity of the situation, and that the dentist, I struggle a little bit. I mean, I realize your family's having an emergency, a family member's having an emergency. I struggle with leaving a patient. And the only reason why I say that is, yes, there are other providers there, but that provider wasn't in the room. They were seeing another patient because they had to be called in when this situation occurred. So I know they weren't there when this was happening. They were sort of generally available. I don't know. I struggle with that a little bit, but I don't want to get too far in the weeds on that part. I realize it was an unfortunate circumstance regardless, but I think my bigger issue was, I'm looking at page 6209, and in the questions that were asked by the investigator, the response, they just thought, was sort of flippant. You know, I don't own a heater, forced air system, or warming blanket. I am not involved in thermal regulation during anesthesia cases. I don't think that's the answer you should give. I think you should say, hey, I understand there was thermal regulation happening. I had that discussion with the anesthesia provider. I'm not sure it's related to this or not, and it is concerning to me that this occurred. But just to say, I found it very dismissive to respond the way they did. That's all. Having said that.
I also have concern about the length of the surgery. Isn't it? I saw how many hours in there. And the patient, I think it come into a morbidity because of his weight. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. I have to be concerned about that. And doing that long procedure, I'm concerned about this. I'm just telling you that.
Well, and just so you know, Saba, there's nothing in our rules currently about length of case, and that's been a point of discussion for the board in other cases. The new rules that are coming out do have an indication of case length. And so that will be something that maybe becomes more of an issue down the road. But yes, I'm concerned about intubating a patient whose BMI is 38.5 in a dental setting. So I agree with you that there's some concerns here, and I think Cynthia identified them as well. So we want to send a letter of concern. We want to identify that the dentist, regardless of their capacity during the procedure and what they may or may not be doing with other involved participants, whoever they may be, is ultimately responsible for the health, safety, and well-being of the patient. Is that the gist of what we're trying to get across to the licensee?
There are seconds.
Great.
April, did you get that language okay? And I know it's recorded, too, so it should be there.
Yeah, no, I got it. I'm still writing it down, but I got it.
Okay, that's fine. All right. We have a second to that recommendation of content for a letter of concern. Further discussion? Roll call.
Can I just clarify who seconded the motion?
Harris.
Thank you. Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asrari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kalanchi?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for that letter of concern recommendation with content. Thank you all. Saba, are you leaving? Or are you?
I'm going to leave. Thank you so much.
Okay. We appreciate it. All right. So we can just mark that Dr. Kalamshi departed at 3 o'clock. We are now on agenda item 4B8, case number 2024-00292. Was there any recommendations for letter of concern here? How about non-disciplinary?
Well, actually, this is Kappas. I had down a letter of concern for documentation.
Yeah, I had it for, I was going to recommend non-disciplinary CE for that, but are there other folks that feel letter of concern or non-disciplinary?
Wasn't there, I mean, there are some open margins here, so I think it probably is a little bit above letter of concern, right? That's what I was thinking.
That was my sense too, Dr. Harris.
Okay. So we're, and did you feel non-disciplinary or disciplinary, Skip or Mindy?
I shouldn't be discussing open margins, but it seemed like the dentist remade the crowns a few times and still wasn't succeeding. So it didn't seem like there was a lot of malice in this. So I was leaning towards non-disciplinary.
I agree.
All right. So a non-disciplinary recommendation. I was considering the PIP program, but it also seems though there's some consideration for CE in restorative crown and bridge. Correct, Mindy?
Correct.
What were you thinking for CE in crown and bridge restoration?
I would say restoration 4 hours.
4 hours of restorative, including crown and bridge?
Correct.
Okay. David, did you have thoughts?
Yeah, I'd like to add on to that something in that training about, you know, yes, we all have issues with treatment, and sometimes we pick up things later, but it's our responsibility at that point later to let the patient know so they can be corrected either by us or somebody else. That was not done.
And you're talking about, like, communication and,
yes.
You know, that's what, interestingly, that's what that PIP program does.
So if it's covered there, then.
It is, because it talks to them about, you know, patient communication, charting. So it's actually it's a pretty interesting program that I think would address exactly what you're saying.
Okay, then I'm good.
So we want to make a non-disciplinary recommendation, completion of the PIP program or PIP, and 4 CEs in the area of restorative to include crown and bridge. Is there a second?
There are seconds.
I'll second.
Okay. Further discussion?
I have a discussion point. Did I misread? I have in my notes that the crown and bridge that was done is outside the 4-year jurisdiction by very little, to be sure. But does that matter then to our recommendation?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either, going back that.
And it's also non-disciplinary.
And he also didn't recognize it and document it when he discovered it outside that.
And that's in that good point, too. Okay? You good with that, Deb?
Yes.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay. Dr. Caputo?
Yes.
Just to explore that a little, the treatment on the crown and bridge was outside the 4-year time period?
Correct. But the, there was a follow-up to it, which Dr. Dell was identifying, that was within that four-year period.
Tony?
And that had encompassed the same issues, right, from after they had performed the treatment?
Correct.
Okay. Just wanted to make clear.
No, that's fine. David, go ahead.
I just didn't recognize the voice. I didn't know if that was a member or not.
Oh, sorry. That's Seamus Monahan, AAG.
Okay. He's obviously mobile now. That's why I didn't recognize him.
Oh, I see. That's funny.
I apologize.
See, we have hawks on this committee, Seamus. Me, I'm just running from room to room, avoiding the noise that's occurring in my house. So, all right. So, non-disciplinary recommendation to include completion of the PIP and four CEs in the area of restoration are restorative to include Crown and Bridge. And there was a second by Harris. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ansari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Comanche? Oh, he's not here. Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Malahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that recommendation. Thank you all. We are now on agenda item 4B11, case number 2024-00321. Is there a recommendation by any member for a letter of concern?
I was thinking letter of concern because there was no treatment there.
I had it down as letter of concern as well.
Okay.
Well, sounds like
I had it down as dismissed.
Yeah, down as dismissed. All right. I had it down just for a non-disciplinary recommendation, but I'm fine with a letter of concern. So who would like to address what they would like to see in a letter of concern to this licensee?
I think the issue was there was no consent, written consent. Maybe that was my main concern.
Right. So what would you just in emphasizing the importance of appropriate communication with patients regarding treatment and ensuring that all consents are collected and documented?
Yes.
Because it also said there are no treatment plans signed by the patient.
I think they were trying to get to the same point that the patient should have been informed about what treatment was being done.
And right. That's why I was – so just so we understand, I mean, I think letter of concerns are nice. The one thing I like what this board does is the non-disciplinary side of it because it's not anything on their record, but it gets them through these programs. And that PIP program – I don't know if you guys have reviewed it, but I really like the way it just kind of works with these dentists. I think the thing I like about it is it's like it tries to change their attitude – and how they approach patient care to try to do it more thoughtfully and responsibly. That's why I was on that end of it, is that I think it's a little bit more than a letter of concern. It just it's kind of calling them to try to do better in their practice. Having said that, if the majority is fine with a letter of concern, we just need to determine content.
And I just point out that the patient's complaint was solely that he was angry that they didn't give him his teeth. And so we're finding fault with something that the patient wasn't complaining about.
No, I understand. I see that side of it too. All right. So if we're still on letter of concern, I'm fine with that. There was the majority of folks had indicated that. I just need to understand some content. So we're sort of talking about an issue about obtaining informed consent. Was there anything else anybody would like to see in that?
I would add something about making sure there's good documentation about medical history review and some other items that might have been not as clear as it could have been.
Was that identified by the investigator?
I think, by the investigator, like documenting the medical history review
Where was that? Because I didn't see it.
Did you see that somewhere, Deb?
I it probably would have been in deviations, 6886.
I'm just looking at their conclusion. Just says no medical history updates, doesn't say that they didn't do their – I just don't want to get too far down the beaten path. Maybe we just say that, you know, there were some identified deficiencies, and our concern is that you're thorough and complete in all your documentation, including medical histories, informed consents, and treatment planning.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Does that sound good to everybody else?
4 seconds.
Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ansari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes for that letter of concern recommendation with the content as discussed. Thank you all. We are now on agenda item 4B14, case number 2024-00330. Anybody identify letter of concern here? How about non-disciplinary?
I think I'm leaning that direction. I mean, this one to me has a little bit more where the dentist did identify there were problems, i.e. there's an impacted third molar. This is going to cause problems with the crown, but he goes ahead and does the crown anyway. Sometimes you just don't do things because the patient says they want it to be done when you know it's going to fail.
Okay. There's also a restitution indication on page 7206. I don't know if you saw that.
I'm going there.
Yeah, that's fine.
This didn't come up, but I don't know if I saw it right or not. Mia, did you see any rubber dam on these root canals?
No.
I didn't see any, so.
That might be the wrong page number, David, because that's a ledger. Oh, I'm sorry. That's 7204. No, 7204.
Going to Mindy's thing, maybe I missed it, but I thought the root canal was done by someone else.
Let's see. So I actually saw this as a violation. And I was going to recommend disciplinary. Let me just see if I have a page reference for you all to where I was at to get you in my head. 7093. Well, there's the restitution that is identified there too. But so they did conclude that the crown was inadequate. Lack of pulpal assessment and documentation. Remade the crown 3 times. Unfortunately, whatever prior to cementation. Yeah, I don't know. Let's see. Is a known risk that a root canal. Oh, I see. It maybe was how he handled the retreatment of the root canal, not that they did the root canal. Julie, is this your case?
Yes, it is. And on page 7114, there's a note that rubber dam isolation was placed.
7114,
December 14, 2022.
Yeah. Rubber dam isolation. Gotcha. Thank you for that. Mia?
But on page 7088, there are multiple images with bones, yeah. Bones on there. And it looks like they
went back and tried to retrieve that tooth at a later date, and that's page 7089. And I think they just retreated the mesial roots because that's where the lesion was, and there's still images with no rubber dam. So
right.
These were truly a series of root canals and retreatments, and it's hard to believe that the rubber dam clamp will not show up on any of those, because the first one is without the crown and the second ones are with crown on. And
nope.
No.
Yeah, I think that's what I saw too, but yeah, so there's definitely a situation there. So, all right. So I am finding, let's do this. I'm finding a violation of 32.12.01.0.1.14. Is there a second?
Kappas, I'll second.
Okay. Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
Infios?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, so motion passes for finding of a violation. As a result, we're at a disciplinary recommendation. I would propose 16 CEs through the Credit Cares program in occlusion, restorative, root canal therapy, and the restitution of $794. Further discussion or changes, edits, or a second?
There are seconds.
Well, before you second, Skip, can you just say that list again, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So a disciplinary recommendation to include 16 CE used through the Credit Cares program to in the areas of occlusion, restorative, root canal therapy, and then restitution of in the amount of $794.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asfari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Lukami?
Yes.
Intias?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that disciplinary recommendation. Thank you all. We are now on agenda item 4B18, case number 2024-00350. Comments for action by the committee.
On behalf of the oral surgeon that takes out teeth with these crowns on them on a regular basis, this irks me to no end that you would do poor crown and bridge with these impactions left in place.
Thank you, Skip. Any thoughts about violations?
So I would recommend a finding of a violation for disciplinary action.
Okay. I identified violations of 32.12.01.01.14 and 24.
Harris seconds.
Anthony, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I had another issue with overdiagnosing.
Okay.
This didn't need crown to begin with.
Okay. So that would still fall within 14. So that's you're there. That's okay.
Yes, but I just want to mention.
No, absolutely. Other discussion. So with Dr. Harris's second, do we have a roll call?
I just want to, I may throw in a comment. You know, just like Dr. Dodell recommended mentioned earlier, I didn't know if this is a situation where the licensee who had earlier actually recommended 17 be out before 18 crown was placed, that he knew that that might be the better path to follow, but I don't know what other what happened, what transpired, but he didn't opt to do that. And so again, I didn't know if there were other
circumstances. Just want to share.
Okay. All right. So right now we're just looking at violations. Did you have something else? Oh, sorry. Thank you, Cynthia. I just saw your hand up again. Okay. So we have identified violations of our proposed violations of 32.12.01.01.14 and 24 with a second by Harris. Other discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Masari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Intias?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motorhardy.
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for the finding of those violations. So this would be a disciplinary recommendation to get the conversation going. I'm proposing 12 CEUs through the Credit Cares Program in Occlusion, Restorative, and Crown and Bridge. Also completion of the CPAP program and then restitution in the amount of $681. $421.50 to the patient and $259.50 back to insurance.
Second.
Second by Motihari. Wow, you even beat Harris. Other discussion?
I'm going to wait. Dr. Harris, your chance.
No. You got it. You can't take away your second. Well, I guess you can, but I'm not going to let you. Other discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Masari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Intias?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motihari?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for that disciplinary recommendation with restitution. If I'm looking at my list correctly, I am done. So let's see. We are now on agenda item 4B20, case number 2024-00370. And who asked for that to be further discussed?
I did.
Okay. You got the floor, doctor.
Okay, so my concern started with page 7948 when the patient was initially seen for comprehensive oral evaluation. Chief complaint is the face is swollen, and it's confirmed with the exam that that's what was happening. In summary, a root canal was started and completed on a tooth with facial swelling, which I don't think many endodontists may do one appointment root canals when the tooth is necrotic, but swelling is one thing that I don't think anybody would do. So even though they prescribed antibiotics. So the patient comes back, there's notes as you follow down every probably five days later, 8 days later, less than 10 days later, and the swelling is there. Instead of referring or taking the fillings out of the roots, they just try to do IND. And at some point, they refer to endodontists who said they could do and they placed the crown, by the way. They cemented the crown shortly after. It still says during cementation that there was some swelling, some pain palpable above that tooth, but the crown was cemented. So then they refer to endodontist, and of course at that point, because of the brand new crown, we're not going to retrieve the tooth. It wasn't me. I don't know who the endodontist was. I didn't find any name, but the endodontist said they could do apical surgery with 80% success rate. So when the patient goes to oral surgeon and said that and said, I want to save the tooth, or I think they went back to the general dentist saying that, the general dentist said, well, it's probably not 80%. It's probably less than 80%. At best, it's 50% because the root is probably fractured, which I doubt the root was fractured. So that's why they were having their oral surgeon take the tooth out, and then the continuation of other things that happened with oral surgeon. But my concern was how things were handled from the very beginning and completing a root canal on, and that would be Dr. S or J.S.
who did a root canal start to finish on a swollen.
And when you say that, Mia, just so I'm following you, JS is not identified in this complaint. It's a different. It's a different doctor.
Yes. Yes.
Gotcha.
It's a dental dentist.
So JS did the root canal, not MM.
Yes.
And from what you're saying, the management was inappropriate. Is that a reasonable word?
Yes. From the beginning and also all the follow-ups.
So,
and by the time I'm cementing a crown on a swollen tooth. Right.
Do you have an issue with doing the root canal when they did it? Like, is that appropriate, or are you saying, if I'm understanding you correctly, this tooth should have, maybe the patient should have been put on antibiotics first, allowed those to have some sort of length of administration, and then do the root canal? Or would it have mattered if you did both at the same time, antibiotics and the root canal, and then or is the issue when they did the crown?
So both, but to address the first part is, ideally when they're swollen, if it's possible to open the tooth, you may get some drainage, some relief, but you would not complete the root canal when they're swollen.
Okay.
And you prescribe antibiotics no matter what when they're swollen. The exception is, let's say it's a posterior tooth, they're so swollen they can barely open, or would be very uncomfortable to administer anesthetic, in which case you just put them on antibiotics, get the swelling down, then you bring it back and open the tooth. So starting the root canal, if possible, is not a bad idea because you may get some drainage through the tooth. It's the fact that not only they completed the root canal, but patient is back every few days complaining of swelling, and they never went back in or referred to an endodontist, and they just try to do IND, and worse situation, to cement a crown.
So it's below the standard of care to obturate an infected tooth. Is that fair?
Swollen, not infected. Swollen.
Okay, swollen, yeah. Tooth. Where there's, and then is it appropriate if you did in fact obturate, but the patient comes back, would it be appropriate to remove the gutta percha?
Yes, I would have done that if there is no new crown. The only time I would jump into surgery would be if there was a new crown and you want to damage
that. Another opportunity for this dentist was to remove the gutta percha when the patient came back 5 days later.
Yes, or refer them.
Or refer. Yeah, sure, I understand. Now, who was the dentist that you identified? Not MM, but?
It's on page 7948. And it's signed by Dr. J.S.
Okay, because I think that it's the same person that's identified in the 1-8 note saying they'll follow up tomorrow regarding questions.
I'm sorry, which note?
The 1-8-2024, 11:34 a.m. At the end, it says, we'll have Dr. S. follow up tomorrow. Regarding.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
That's the same person. So this is the person that did all the treatment.
Yes.
And it looks like, to your point, it says, the patient says, they're still swollen, different kind of swelling, still very sore. Questions were, should I postpone the crown prep, and should I be on prednisone? And it looks like that was never answered.
Right.
Which you would have said, yeah, let's postpone the crown prep because you want this tooth to settle down.
Right. In case you have to go back in, let's not place the permanent crown on there.
What were you thinking about on this case?
Definitely endo-CE. I am okay non-disciplinary, but I don't know because the case is not against that dentist. How do we go about this?
So what we do in these cases, just like we did in the earlier one that Dr. Fukami caught me on, is we can dismiss against the dentist that's named in the complaint. And from what I can see, there's enough information here, and this is what would meet the requirement for Seamus to the board, is that there's enough information that we can see that we don't have to open up a new investigation, basically. It's all here.
Right.
And then, so the first thing to do would be to dismiss against the licensee. Seamus, go ahead.
Just for Dr. Israel's edification too, the staff, if you do find in this case and you want to move forward with something against somebody who's not named in the complaint, the staff will then open a complaint and they will forward all of that and allow them to respond based on your recommendation before it goes to the board. So I just wanted to give you that background in case you didn't have it.
So do you think that's a better way to do this then, Seamus, is just go ahead and open up a complaint against that licensee?
Oh, no. Again, so staff will do that. That's what happens on the back end when you
I see. Gotcha.
When you go through this process, they will always send it to them and allow them to respond to what your recommendation is before it goes to the board.
I see. Right, because the licensee has to be notified.
Yep, absolutely. Gotcha.
All right. Yeah, and I appreciate that. Mia, go ahead.
And then one more thing on page 7927, the investigator mentioned that there is potential restitution because Dr. M indicated that the treatment on the treatment notes that the credit for the treatment that Dr. S did would be provided, but they never provided any treatment ledgers to the board for us to even know what that restitution is should be.
Oh. That's interesting. So maybe because there's no treatment ledger, we need that information, right?
Yes.
But now, so to your point, Seamus, if we're making this recommendation, staff would handle all that, is what you're saying.
Are you saying that there's information that you're requesting in order to make that recommendation?
Well, there's a restitution implication potentially.
Okay. So if you believe if you don't want to make a restitution, you can just simply state your recommendation that they've requested restitution, but you don't have enough information to provide that number.
Couldn't we just have the investigator make that recommendation to the board when they get that information?
That's usually how that would happen, yes.
So we can make a recommendation for dismiss on one, open on another, find a violation of disciplinary, and make a recommendation for restitution for all work performed on that too.
To be determined by the board at a later date. Absolutely.
And then Mia, do you see that because restitution is involved, it has to be a disciplinary recommendation?
Oh, okay.
So which I think is reasonable here. So let's do this first. I think we're all in agreement to dismiss against MM. So do I have a motion to dismiss?
Motion to dismiss. That's Harris.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Was that you, Mia?
That's Fukami.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. Dr. Fukami seconds. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Liddell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Intias?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Manohari?
Yes.
Okay, so that motion carries for dismissal. Next, we have a violation of 32.12.01.01.14. Is there a second to that?
Yes, opening a new case on dentists.
JS.
For JS for 14. Second.
Okay. So, yes. So this is a motion for a case against JS in violation of 32.12.01.01.14. Second by Harris. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Fukami?
Yes.
Intias?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Manohari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for the finding of that violation against JS. So we are proposing a disciplinary recommendation, and you had mentioned CE in root canal treatment?
Yes.
What would you like to see? How much and what would you like to see?
Well, I think diagnosis would be the issue here. I don't know. if risk management would be part of that, if that's part of once patient has swelling, what to do.
How about diagnosis, treatment planning? Yeah, I like risk management or complications.
Complications, great, yes.
Okay. How many CEs?
Do we generally do 4 to 6?
It depends on how much do you think would be required to cover the areas that you're recommending? 8?
Yes, 8 sounds.
Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. So 8 CEs in the area of root canal therapy, including diagnosis, treatment planning, and complications.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. And then to include restitution, and Skip, can you say what you said? Because you said it better than I think I can.
To include restitution for the work performed on that tooth by JS.
All treatment performed on that tooth, which is tooth number 7.
Correct.
Okay. Is there a second to that?
That's 30 seconds.
Okay. So we have a second to that disciplinary recommendation with CE and potential restitution. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Monahari?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries for that recommendation. Thank you all. We are now on agenda item 4B22. Case number 2024-00374. Skip, was this you?
It was, and again, probably outside of my own realm of expertise, but weren't there some poor stainless steel crowns here that needed to be assessed?
Do you have a page number?
I don't.
Anybody see what he's seeing?
It is stainless steel crowns, but I don't remember the page offhand, but we'll get there.
Conclusions can be found on 8239.
8239. And so is this in Dr. Imtiaz's area?
Yes.
I remember this. Yeah, I would love to hear your input on this.
Yeah, on the anterior crowns, on a couple of them, it looks like there is a little overhang. But the thing with stainless steel crowns, Anthony, is sometimes they're passive fit, and you're counting on glass ionomer cement to fill in the gaps over there.
Yes, and I mean that's where I kind of was struggling. And
but on tooth D, you can see a decent. Decent margin right there. But it's also kind of like the angle of the x-ray as well to some extent.
Right. But
and on the posteriors, sometimes you just have some overhang based on the size of the prefabricated crowns.
What did you think about this case?
Overall, I thought it was okay, other than I thought maybe tooth D had a little bit of an overhang on it.
Okay.
I think it was done under GA, I believe.
It was.
Yeah.
Yes, we have the record. That's on page 8233. I think I heard a hand go up.
Yeah, this is Harris. I only pulled it because I wanted somebody to tell me.
Yeah, no, totally. And because I think that's why I had a question mark on it, Skip. Now, Umar, looking at page 8232,
yep.
Do you see it says deviation?
8232. Yeah.
So do you agree with those statements or based on what you reviewed? Because that's what I was struggling with. How do you say, for example, that the stainless steel crowns are not ideal and all 4 anterior stainless steel crowns were extracted due to poor prep shape and open margins.
Yeah, the prep sometimes for the stainless steel crowns is you basically, based on the newer techniques, people are literally just breaking the margins, the interproximals, and just cementing the crowns. Usually it's not stainless steel. Usually it's resin veneer stainless steel crowns.
Oh, is it like a kind of like a hall prep?
Kind of like a hall prep, yeah. And sometimes they call them like Kinder crowns or crowns. Right. Yeah.
And the Kinder crowns, they require a fair amount of tooth prep, right?
Usually they do, yeah. And sometimes you can only, if it's resin facing, you can only crimp on the lingual because the back is the steel, the front is resin, and if it's zirconia crowns, there's no crimping at all. So you're just trying to get the closest size with a passive fit to cover everything. And then you're counting on the cement to cover the margins.
What were you considering on this case?
I was just thinking maybe I had this one more in letter of concern. Just, you know, you're working under GA, so keep an eye out. You know, you have a little more. You're not working on a moving target. So,
right, but they were under GA. So, oh, I see. You're saying while you're working under GA,
yeah, just keep an eye out.
The opportunity to utilize the time you have with a more cooperative patient.
Yes, exactly.
I
and
see.
You know, make sure you know the size of the crowns looks fine. I just don't know. You know, especially I'm looking at tooth D and E, like. If it was the prep or if it, you can crimp the stainless steel portion more on the mesial and just push them down more. That's maybe what I'm thinking. See if you can get more of a fit. So maybe just, review your technique on prepping and cementing, stainless steel crowns under general anesthesia.
Okay.
And I think this was also the one, wasn't this the one where there were some concerns from the mom wasn't told or something? Or was that a different case that these crowns were being done or something?
Oh, God. You know, I remember, yeah, it says that on page 8240, patient's mother signed two treatment plans and two consent forms that describe removing decay and placing fillings in stainless steel crowns. Mentions that the parent was informed that the teeth would not be shaved down.
Yes, that's the one, yeah.
And then front desk went over treatment with mom. Consent forms. It appears that the mother was informed that the teeth would be touched and trimmed to remove decay.
Yeah, I think there was miscommunication. Maybe the doctor didn't go over clearly enough or just have the front. The front desk.
It was a debate between the term prepped versus shaved.
Yeah.
So maybe
there was a conversation and a consent.
Maybe in the letter of concern emphasizing thorough communication and description of proposed treatment.
Correct. Yes.
As well as being thoughtful and conscientious with tooth prep design.
And crown cementation.
How about crown? I mean, you can't really form those crowns though too much, can you, right? Once they have something on them, you don't really have a lot of room to do any adjustment to the margins, do you?
Not really, no.
Because it'll just pop off, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you're just trying to get, you know, you're trying to get the best size that fits in the interproximal space and doesn't really look too large. So you're trying to get the smallest crown that has kind of a passive fit.
Well,
especially on the anteriors.
Yeah, I'm fine deferring to you, obviously, as our specialist here, that a letter of concern addressing these areas is appropriate. And I think in the letter of concern, identifying the importance of good, thorough communication, particularly for a general anesthesia case, right? Because the parents are usually not going to be in the room, and so you want to make sure they understand what's going to happen to their child once treatment's commences.
Correct.
And then in addition to that, understanding that when you have a patient under general anesthesia, you do have the availability of time to make appropriate and good decisions about tooth prep design and crown placement and then cementation.
Correct. That sounds good.
You okay with that?
Yes.
Okay. Did that kind of address what you were thinking about, Skip?
Seconded.
Okay. Any other comments or thoughts about that letter of concern recommendation? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Dodo?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
MTS?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Matahari?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries for that letter of concern. Recommendation with content. We are now on our last case. Agenda item 4B27, case number 2024-00452. And Skip, I think you pulled this as well?
Yes, I guess maybe I misread this a little bit, but didn't it seem like the patient didn't agree to treatment and then was being harassed to complete treatment? Like I didn't get a dismissal on this because it seemed like the patient paid something and didn't want it or never paid but didn't approve treatment. And so I was just confused by the case.
Okay. But I think what you're saying is, from what I'm seeing, correct. Umar, go ahead.
I think I read somewhere on this case, did the patient pay $800 to start the case or to cover the lab fee?
If you look at page 9307, addresses the kind of the bedside manner thing as well as issues regarding insurance billing and collection. But it does go on to say that Dr. M did not provide full care start nor completion, but filed a collection directive at full value. Then Dr. M said they would resume discussions with the patient to have the lab fees paid to void the collection account. The parties left it on themselves to resolve their financial matters. And then treatment was not provided.
But the patient is claiming the treatment wasn't approved. The patient claims they went for a consult, never approved anything, and the next thing they know, they're getting a bill.
And I think that's why they're saying in the allegation one, treatment not provided. It does say substantiated. So you're correct. And yes, to your point, Umar, on that same page, the lab fees and records are estimated at $800. All right, Skip, what are you thinking?
I don't think the patient paid anything. I think this is – oh, Cynthia has her hand up.
Okay.
Well, I mean, maybe I'll just – my impression was, and I need to look at this again, was that she actually did voice interest in proceeding and sign the financial agreement, which did not require a down payment at the time, but apparently the office took that to mean that she agreed to treatment. So they actually sent up – they took records, including impressions, and then sent out for the start of treatment, the Invisalign trays. And then she decided not to proceed with treatment, but they would keep calling her and asking her to come back in to start treatment, and she, in fact, did not respond to the office. And it went back and forth like that for a year. I don't know if and when she actually told them she did not want to proceed, but a year later, I guess they said they didn't hear any communications from her, so that's why they sent her to collections for what sounds like the full amount. And I think that's where there's a point of discrepancy here, is because they could have, I think the office is requesting at least for her to pay the lab fees for the first set of Invisalign treatment, since those were ordered on behalf of what they thought was her acknowledgement to proceed. And she's saying, I don't think that I'm going to pay, certainly not responsible for the whole amount. And I, in fact, hadn't wanted to proceed, but there's no record here that says that she, in fact, communicated with the office that she wanted to stop. that she didn't want to proceed, right.
So, perhaps I missed it. I just didn't see her approving to begin treatment anywhere. In her statement, she said she didn't approve it at any point. So that's where I got a little mixed up. That's why I wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, no, I think I'm along the lines of what sent that. I think what I saw was there was some acceptance on her part, and I think she was sort of backtracking a little bit when things devolved to where they did. Deb?
Yeah, I just think just by the fact that aligners were made and they had pointed her to deliver the aligners that she didn't show. So I think she approved the case. They wouldn't have gone that far if there
were. So that the page is 9,305. Sorry, Deb, I apologize for me. If you look at 9,305, there's a form that was signed by her that acknowledges the. It is a financial sheet, not a consent per se, so I don't know how to evaluate that.
Well, it says payment options worksheet.
Yeah.
So I can see either way. The problem is I think there is probably both sides. There's a lack of communication.
I had the impression from the consultant or the investigator that in talking to both parties that they are amenable to coming to an agreement over this. And because I think the heart of it is money. So sure. It's a monetary dispute. And I think there's evidence to suggest that there's some sort of a positive resolution. So.
Sure. Julie, is this your case?
It isn't, but if I could help, there is a signed informed consent for the orthodontic treatment by the patient. It's on page 9370 through 9372. It's like three pages long.
Yes. And the patient initials as well as signs.
Correct.
Okay. Well, if it looks like the patient committed, then that solves that problem. I would be fine with the letter of concern or dismissal.
Okay. Where are other folks at? Cynthia, what were you thinking?
I wrote down letter of concern. Letter of concern that the damages should be limited to the lab fees and the records.
Okay. Deb, what were you thinking?
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I had a letter of concern for no perio evaluation prior to ortho. There didn't seem to be.
I second that, Deb.
Okay.
That was my concern as well.
And you were like, okay, so it looks like we're at letter of concern. So I'm fine with that recommendation. We want in it importance of comprehensive hard and soft tissue examination prior to any orthodontic care, including aligners. Is that reasonable?
Yes.
Okay. And then, Cynthia, could you restate what you said? Because I thought that was good. If there's a discrepancy about money, it should be limited to.
Yeah, the damages. Recommend that the damages should be limited to the lab fees and records.
Which was addressed to the point Umar made earlier. That's where the 800 came from.
Right. And as Deb said, I think they might have already had a conversation about this multiple ways. So,
which could help with the letter of concern. But your point is to emphasize that, you know, yeah, you might have been angry or upset, but that doesn't mean you should just go for the whole amount. Just collect the money for what you actually paid out of pocket. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, sir. I don't know how the billing, you know, if that's the way that billing usually works, right, is that they assume that the whole treatment fee should be completed. And I think that they were trying to encourage her to come in and complete treatment, so that might have been part of it.
I understand, but they did make the aligners, and I think maybe that's part of what their position is too, right?
Correct.
But nonetheless, a comment regarding damages being limited to the lab work and what else did you say?
I only said lab fees and records.
Lab and records. That was the other thing. So a letter of concern that emphasizes the importance of comprehensive hard and soft tissue evaluation before starting orthodontic treatment, including aligners, And if there are financial issues that come up and care is stopped or terminated, the patient should only have to pay for those fees that were incurred up to that point of discontinuation. Something to that effect? Does that sound okay to you, or am I not saying that right?
I mean, I'm going to guess every situation is different. That's why I didn't want to make a more global statement than just to say this situation. That's what I thought was appropriate for the new raise the situation. But
right, but you can also extrapolate that if it happened here, it probably could happen in another situation, right?
I suppose so, yes.
Well, I mean, that's kind of how we get here, right?
Yep.
And if it's a one-off for them, then they can interpret it that way too. But the idea being is, you know, try to reasonably work out financial issues with your patients that's appropriate to treatment or care that has actually been provided versus not provided. I think is what I hear you saying. Is that fair? Okay. And April, did you seem to get that flavor okay?
I did, yes.
All right. So that it's a letter of concern recommendation discussing appropriate treatment sequencing, including examination, as well as good communication and discussion about fees and reimbursement as appropriate for each individual case. Is there a second for that?
Kappa, second.
Okay. Further discussion? Roll call.
Caputo?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Asari?
Yes.
Dodell?
Yes.
Bukami?
Yes.
Imtiaz?
Yes.
Kappas?
Yes.
Martin?
Yes.
Motahari?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries for that letter of concern, recommendation, and content. Thank you all. So that's our cases. So that concludes agenda item 4, I believe. So we are now on agenda item 5. First of all, thank you to those of you who responded. I appreciate the feedback. As I already indicated, I think some of the comments regarding how we course through these cases was helpful. And I kind of internalized that and thought it would be even good just to apply it immediately as we did sort of today. And I appreciate you guys working through that. I think we all work really well together. I appreciate all the time and investment everybody puts into these cases. And really as a general overview of what I saw in the response, it wasn't really anything definitive one way or the other, other than it seemed like from what I could ascertain from those who did respond that we're kind of good with where we're at right now. So I don't see any indication to change what we've been doing. In terms of our appointments, length of appointments, or how we identify different roles within the committee. Having said that, I am always open to any feedback, criticism, considerations, or other thoughts about how we could do our business better. So I think my goal, at least I should say, instead of saying I think, is to at least check in with you guys annually to see kind of the same thing, how we're doing. But if there's anything that comes up in the meantime, you know, I want you all to feel very comfortable reaching out to me and sharing and discussing anything with me about the committee and how we do our work, because that's important to me that we're all kind of feeling comfortable, we're feeling that our voices are heard and that we're accomplishing what we need to accomplish. Having said that, you guys obviously had these in your packet. Did those get provided? Yasmin, were you guys able to see the
Yes, all the responses.
Oh, you saw what. So, does anybody have any thoughts or comments or otherwise about any of those or anything that I've discussed? Well, again, I appreciate you guys all very much, and what you guys bring to this committee is, I think, so valuable and important, and I completely just really am appreciative of your continued work and effort. We are now on agenda item 6. And so, as you all know, we sort of put a call out there for a prosthodontist / general dentist with a lot of experience in prosthodontics. So we have a listing of 5 people. I just want to know, as we kind of decide who might be someone, and are we making any recommendations on selection, Ryan?
That would be my hope, but if,
no, that's fine. So I want to start with, do any committee members know these folks or referred any of these folks, and therefore that's how they came here? Okay.
I know of one, but I didn't provide the name, but I'm glad to see him on here.
And okay, and so who's that, Katie?
That's Dr. Ali.
Ali, and thoughts, comments, good addition, would be recommended?
We've been working with him, I'd say, over the last maybe 2.5 years. I've had really great responses from our patients that we sent there. He sends a lot of patients to our practice. In the handful of times that I've spoken with him on the phone about patient care, he seems to be very thorough. So I don't have anything of concern to say. I think he would be a good addition.
Okay. Anybody know any of the other dentists that submitted their credentials?
I have interviewed Dr. Garlick for a position, but he's not a prosthodontist.
No, that's okay. Who was it?
Dr. Garlick.
Oh, yeah. Jeff. Okay. Thoughts about him?
He's not a prosthodontist.
No, that's fine. But he has experience doing prosthodontics, yeah?
I don't know.
Well, according to his CV, he has a fellowship through the International College of Oral Implantologists. He's served as a consultant in a variety of positions, including our state board. Any comments from anybody on the staff that knows him and interactions working with him or thoughts about him functioning on this committee? Seamus?
I think maybe for these purposes, it may be appropriate to agree on, maybe all 5 or just a group of 5 that you think, based on the information that they presented to the committee, who's the most capable based on their education, experience, and training. And if that is all 5, that's absolutely appropriate.
So, but if we agree on all 5, then who makes the selection of 1? That's all we're trying to do is select 1, right, Ryan?
Yeah, and you could say all 5 are, because it's a recommendation to the board, and then the board will say.
Oh, I see.
Well, I'll just use Dr. Ali. And then, but if you have a preference, so if you say all 5 are great, send all 5 to the board and just say our preference is Dr.
Well,
Ali, whatever.
And I appreciate that. And I guess I think that's what Seamus was saying. So I apologize, Seamus, if I didn't understand what you were saying directly.
No, he made it more clear.
So, yeah, I mean, I felt pretty good with this group. Does everybody feel similarly?
Can I throw in a comment, though?
Yeah.
I mean, these people all put in their CVs. That's all great. Are they aware of what's involved with being on this group in terms of the hours and everything? So maybe if they find out, it's not just going to show up once in a while and do a consultation. they may withdraw. So maybe we should center that before submitting recommendations.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that's fair. But do we have that? Does anybody have that conversation with them, Ryan, after they submit their credentials?
So we've tried to do what we can as staff that can't. You can't hear me?
Yeah, no, we can hear you.
Okay.
Now we can't hear you.
So we've done what we can, even in the advertisement.
Ryan?
I
was going to say, would it be appropriate for a member of this committee already to reach out to each one of them and just introduce ourselves and say, you know, we just want to let you know what's involved or just answer questions and see if they want to proceed forward?
Yeah, I think that would be – I'd be comfortable with that. My recommendation would be, like, especially if you're going to do Seamus's option, just send them all. We could vet the process. This is kind of the first stepping stone. If there's one that you don't like, then staff's not going to spend the time, nor would we ask a committee member to spend the time. Not like, but you know what I mean? Like, just doesn't think it would be a good fit, then I think that you could take them off and we would just reach out to those and just say, hey, we can move you on from here if this is something you're still interested in.
Seamus?
Just along the lines of what Ryan, Dr. Dodell were saying, I do think it would be appropriate if the committee agrees to, you know, appoint one person to talk to all these people and you know, not provide like a huge write-up or maybe a summary that could help the committee to make a recommendation.
Well, I think what David was more so getting at is just, you know, making sure they kind of appreciate what's involved in serving on this committee and if that's something that they understand and embrace. And or maybe they're like, oh, I didn't realize it required that much work and effort, and I don't think that's something I want to do. I think that's more about it. Right, David? Is that what you were sort of?
Yeah, I just want to make sure we don't get someone on the committee, and then within a month they resign and we're starting this whole process over again.
So I think it was more just kind of, hey, thanks so much for your interest. We just wanted to reach out to you, tell you a little bit about how this committee functions, what our schedule's like, and just help you appreciate what's involved and what kind of commitment you're making.
Totally get it. I just want to make sure that that information is disseminated to the committee as a whole appropriately.
So let the committee see it first, and then we could go on to the each of the applicants. Yes?
Yes.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. Cynthia, did you have a hand up?
Yeah, I was just going to echo the same thing because I think we had this conversation last month when I think I mentioned to you that I had already reached out to two individuals, and then after having a conversation with at least one of them extensively on the phone, I think after thinking about it, that's when that person opted to decline after realizing that the time commitment perhaps wasn't quite what they expected, et cetera. So I think it's Dodell's point. Very relevant. I'm not sure how that would be communicated by a piece of paper. I really think that the other person on the line is going to have some questions for an existing committee member.
Yeah. I really think, yeah, I think the issues for us, what I would say is we identify the committee's function, the schedule, and the time requirement for both the committee meetings and for preparation. And that's kind of what we discuss with them to make sure they have a sense of that. But yeah, you're right, Cynthia. It doesn't take away from, hey, the person having one question, two questions, 10 questions as follow-ups.
Yep.
Ryan,
sorry.
Nope, sorry.
I love the way you put 4 to 6 hours preparing. I have to say, I put at least an entire day. So I think it's different for everybody. Depends mm-hmm. on how detail-oriented you are. But I think 4 to 6 hours, even though it might be true for some people, is a little bit underestimated.
Yeah, I agree.
No, I didn't realize you wrote 4 to 6 hours. I thought that was 4 to 6 days.
I know. That's what I was going for.
All right. So
I agree. I think that's an underestimate of what the time is. So
okay. Well, Ryan probably wrote that, so I'll take it up with him later.
He's correcting it in lifetime.
Yeah, right.
I don't know about Jay, but
I never wrote that. All right. So, anybody interested in being the point of contact?
I don't mind doing it. I know I'm pretty famous with Tell It Like It Is. Most of the time I tell people what nobody else wants to say. So if you're looking for a volunteer, I'm not.
Well, I am, yes. Seamus, go ahead.
Dr. Caputo, I would just say that any communications for the committee, again, wet blanket here, should probably go through somebody on staff as the point of contact.
You mean the staff contacts the applicants, not a committee member?
No, a committee member can. I'm just saying everything should be relayed through staff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, sure. But if what I'm trying to do is see if there's a committee member that would be – because I think it would be appropriate to have the same committee member contact all the applicants.
100%. That wasn't trying to step on your toes. Just,
no, I understand. But then, yeah, so we would just coordinate that activity with staff. Yeah? That's what you meant?
Please, yes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So, Mindy, you're okay contacting each of these applicants?
Sure.
I'm very happy to have you do it, and I appreciate you volunteering for that.
Sure.
All right. Ryan, I just have you guys talk and figure out who is a good point of contact for Mindy to go through the process of talking with each of these folks. And then I guess the follow-up would be, well, really, it would be if they all are in agreement with your presentation, let's just put it this way. Anyone who's in agreement with your presentation after speaking with them, then their name will just get forwarded to the board.
Sure. What I can do is at the end of the conversation, I can ask them if they're still interested
right.
for them to be passed, and then I can communicate that with everybody.
Right. And so if they say no, then we'll remove their name, obviously. And so if all five of them say yes, thank you so much, I embrace all that, and I'm ready to go, then we'll submit all five names to the board. If it's only two or three, then it's only two or three, whoever it may be.
Sounds good.
Does that seem reasonable to you, Ryan? I always feel like I put him on the spot. And Seamus, that's fine if we function in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, that's a, you know, I don't want to step on anybody's toes. I just think it's appropriate to have sure. You know, documentation at the staff level of these conversations.
Right. Okay. Yeah, no, absolutely. Other comments, thoughts about the approach here for this open position?
Sorry, maybe no. I'm biased as a specialist, but as I think Dr. Motahari touched up on that too, if you do have a specialist, I think that would be valuable to use their expertise, even though a general dentist could have a lot of knowledge and information, but just a thought.
I understand. No, I appreciate that. Of the group that's there, were there specialists or were they all GPs?
There are two prosthodontists.
Okay. Yeah, we have two prosthodontists there.
Okay. Are there other thoughts about a specialist versus a GP?
This is Kappas. I just remember our conversation in putting out this call was to prioritize getting a prosthodontist. So if we've got two on the list, it seems like they ought to have some kind of a priority or a preference.
Okay. Ryan?
Yeah, I'll just tell you that if you send general dentists along with the prosthodontist, you might end up with the general dentist because there are some, actually several on the board that would like to see another general dentist on the committee. So that maybe they would get their wish as opposed to you getting yours.
So is it wise to just have communication with the two prosthodontists?
Yeah, I mean, I would, based on the fact that we wrote it to the prostatectomy community, the advertisement, I would start with them. And if we lose them in that part of the process, then reach out to the others after that.
Awesome. Deb, thank you for that reminder. So that's what you'll do. Mindy, start with the two prostatectomy.
I was going to say there is another one that I will have a communication and send the information to the board as well. The other prostatectomists I was going to communicate. I'm actually going to have that communication this weekend, so hopefully we can add the other one to the list as well.
So we'll have
hopefully three.
But we'll recommend only prostatectomists at this point. If after you communicating with them and explaining what we've just discussed that they decide they don't want to do it, then you'll go to the general dentist on the list.
Sounds good.
Okay, perfect. That's awesome. Other comments? Well, I appreciate that a lot, everybody. Just a general reminder to continue looking at that complaint log to identify any potential conflicts that you might see coming up. Any current events that we need to be apprised of, Ryan?
Just a few. And out of curiosity, I was going to share with you the results from the common pitfall, just because it's current. You guys probably all saw it. Whether we answered or not, I think it's kind of intriguing. But the board had their continuation hearing on Friday. This is not about me, but it was my anniversary on Friday, so I did not attend. Probably we had somebody better attend. Christina attended in my place. She did a great job. The board got the max continuation they're giving is 6 years. So it seems like they change all the time, and it's so silly, but it used to be 5 and 10, and then it went 4 to 8, 4 and 8, and now it seems like it's 2 and 6. So we got the 6-year continuation. So that's a good thing. And I'm not going to be here in 6 years to go through it again. I can tell you that much right now. there's a couple other legislative matters that are being reviewed in the legislation this year. One of them may cause some anxiety for a lot of you. There is the dental compact. Is as much as they said they were not going to lobby, they have lobbied. And there is a bill to introduce a dental board dental compact amongst states. And so if you're interested in that, I don't have that number. I thought I had this number handy. I'll cover it. I'll tell you the number in a second if I can find it real quick.
It's HB 2190.
2190. Thank you, Deb. So Deb is also very instrumental for the Hygiene Association as their constituent for policy and affairs within the Capitol. So it didn't surprise me that she knew it. So thanks for jumping in there. And it does affect both dentists and hygienists. And I'm going to share my screen now to cover one other thing. There's other bills, and I'll try to give you information as they come up just by email. Don't respond other than to me only. I usually blind copy. But you'll see it. But this is the common pitfall questions that came up or that we just did recently, and I wanted to share it with you because I thought it was super cool. So you guys are all aware that this is sent out, I would assume, because we do a blast once a quarter. We're trying to do it once a quarter. So this is kind of and I'll go super quick because I don't want to spend a ton more time because I think everybody probably just wants to go home. These are the most frequently missed questions, 4, 5, and 6. How long are licensees required to keep their CE certificates? 81% got this one correct, which I thought was a good show of people are staying engaged. 4, 5, and 6, wait till you see those are pretty interesting. Can dental assistants perform dental scaling with the direct supervision of a treating dentist? The answer is no. 45 people still think yes. Number 3, are dental assistants required to hold a radiography certificate in order to take x-rays? Yes, 99 said no. Here's the interesting one. Does a dental assistant, this came up a lot, and Dr. Caputo and I talked about this a lot before I did the study group in Tucson. thought it would be helpful to say something. So I mentioned a little bit down there, but dental asphyxiation has come up a lot across the entire dental profession in Arizona. And there's a lot of dentists that think dental assistants can do far more than they are allowed to do by statute or rule. This is an example of that. Does a dental assistant need to become an expanded function dental assistant, or EFTA often, to be able to apply sealants and fluoride under general anesthesia?
Supervision.
55% said no, which is huge. It's 10% greater than the correct answer, which is 319. Number five, does a dental practice need to be registered with a board? This kind of covered a topic that we had today earlier on the cut. Be registered with the board if the practice is exclusively owned by Arizona Dentists. Most people got this question wrong. Almost 80% got it wrong. They only have to be registered if any percentage is owned by a non-dentist. It's one of the easier things to say, but it's apparently harder to understand. Any portion of it that is owned by a non-dentist, it has to be registered dentist. And then number six, there's another question I'll cover, but six says, can a licensee or registered business entity release a patient's dental records to someone other than the patient themselves? Surprisingly, this is about a 50-50 split. It's a greater percentage got it wrong just by a little bit. 50.1% said, it's one person more actually, said no. The answer obviously is yes. 32.1264G would tell you that. And then the last one is, when is a licensee required to register with a controlled substance prescription monitoring program? Overwhelmingly, it got 77% got this one correct, but there are still a few out there. So we've been contacted by the schools. They want this to be a little more relevant within their classrooms. Apparently, I've heard that the schools are using some of this. All of these, they're not open for people to continue to answer in perpetuity. But they're all available on the website, so you can look at the previous eight, and this is the current version. If you guys want me to send you this one and you haven't had an opportunity to answer and you want to, just shoot me or Christina an email. We'll be happy to share it with you. But we thought it'd be relevant to share it with you guys, since you guys are the ones that kind of established what the recommendations are to the board for violations such as this. So, and that was it for current events. Sorry to be long-winded.
Oh, that's excellent. Thank you so much. As far as our next meeting is concerned, it is scheduled on February 25th. I will not be here. I think I had mentioned to you guys previously, but my wife is running her sixth world major. So she's running the Tokyo Marathon at that time. So we'll be out there for that. And who doesn't want to go to Japan during cherry blossom season? Skip, are you going to be here?
I'm not sure. I have to check the date.
Okay. Well, either Dr. Harris will run the meeting or a designee if he's not available.
What was the date again?
February 25th.
I definitely need to check the date.
Okay. So, I won't be here, so... I hope you guys all have a good meeting, and I'll look forward to seeing you at the next one. And once again, can't say it enough, I appreciate all of you and everything you do for the committee. And I appreciate Ryan and his entire staff for all of your support, and Seamus for always keeping us on the straight and narrow. You guys all have a great day. So we'll adjourn our meeting at 4:23 p.m. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great job. Have a good day.
Bye now.
Bye.